To the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. I listen because Rod and Karen are hot.
Murray took the opportunity in her article to further develop her conception of what Aisha Hardison terms Jane Crow discourse, a way of speaking about black female subjectivity under a specific set of social conditions, mass migration, changing gender relations, class anxiety, and racial strife. Murray proclaimed that the Negro woman was in a state of revolt against a dual framework of male supremacy and white supremacy, in which the Negro woman finds herself at the bottom of the socioeconomic scale. The revolt was being felt most keenly among Negro college trained and professional women. Such a woman, who in many cases had outpaced her male counterparts in educational achievement, could not find a mate with whom she can share all the richness of her life in addition to its functional aspects. Murray averred that these women's advanced educational skills and increased earning power were a social handicap if the woman wanted marriage. Men would shy away from such relationships because it's too great a threat to their security, and since black women could not look to these relationships for economic security, they might still find in them a modicum of emotional security. But here again, Murray declares, she, the Negro woman, is defeated. The American Negro male is not prepared to offer emotional security because he has rarely, if ever, known it himself. His submerged status in American life places unnatural stresses and strains upon his already inadequate equipment inherited from our immature democracy. Notwithstanding the clear dig at black men's inadequate equipment, a dig that is shot through with Murray's own anxieties regarding her equipment. She nailed the analysis of the way that racism and the failures of liberal American democracy have stunned and entrapped black men in retrograde ideas about black masculinity. This frustrated masculine and gender development equated to a general miseducation of the sexes, which, when coupled with outmoded social taboos, that have helped to form rigid molds into which sexes are poured and which determine in advance the role men and women are played in community life. The politics of racial manhood compel black men to act as if they are the lords of creation, the breadwinners, and warriors of our time and of all time. But Murray assess they play the role with varying degrees of hamacting and success, and really are as frightened and insecure as modern women are. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast with your host Rod and
Karen,
and we are live on a Tuesday, ready to do some podcasting.
Yes, we are.
Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Search the Black Guy Who Tips, all those places that you listen to podcasts, and you'll find us. In case you stole somebody's phone and it's your first time hearing us,
shout out to you.
The official weapon of the show is
the taser,
an unofficial sport.
What about
a bullet ball extreme? And that excerpt that I read today is from the book Beyond Respectability: Women, Gender, and Sexuality in American History by Brittany C. Cooper. And that was her interpretation of Pauli Murray, who was a gender nonconforming, possibly trans man, but they didn't have the words for all that during her time. And she was writing that so long ago, about like the way gender works and the way oppression works in America and how it has really hurt the development of black men, how it's hurt the development of at least cishet relationships in the black America, with, you know, black men ascribing to essentially a masculinity that's unattainable in this country for black men anyway.
Correct.
But really is harmful to everybody. It's a white male type of definition of what a man is. And right, you know, that entire definition of manhood is founded on the oppression of others. As you know, the white man is essentially all about the fact that he can push everyone else down. And so the idea, and this, I mean, this shit permeates to this day, man, like the idea that a black woman who is successful and outpaces her male counterparts, a cishet black woman anyway, outpaces her male counterparts in education, earning, things of this nature, immediately sort of cordons herself off from being quote unquote dateable without it being intimidating to some man, like, oh, my woman earns more than me, well then I can't be with her, you know. Oh, she's smarter than me. Well, fuck that. A man's supposed to be the smartest one. And so you got to dull yourself down, dumb yourself down, or, you know, do something in order to placate the ego of these men, which, you know, is holding you back.
Yeah, and a lot of women do that. But I'm happy there is a generation of women that go, nah, fuck that. Mm-hmm. My education is my education. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not going to make less to stroke your ego and make your ass feel better. Like, I can't do that. I'm not going to put myself in a box. Because the thing is, particularly being a black woman, well, black people in general, their bodies are controlled, but particularly black women, your body is very controlled. Mm-hmm. From your hair to your clothes to your body to your sexuality, like every aspect of your life is picked at and nicked at and pulled apart, you know, till for some black women, even as they get older, and some, they never find out who they really are because they're so picked apart, they can't even put themselves back together again, because in the midst of everybody picking them apart, they lost themselves in that process. Mm-hmm. And you have women now that either older women that have found themselves or younger women that go, fuck that. You have women now that's going, no, I'm not changing. I know who I am. These are the things I want. These are the things that I desire, you know, because also black women, we put everything before us. Black before everything. You know, woman don't mean shit. Black, you know, put black first. You know, I don't get the option of putting myself as a woman first and meeting my womanly needs. Those things don't matter. What matter is the blackness. And when the blackness, you actually, you know, default is black man and black children. Like put those things before you, black woman. You know, how dare you come in here and talk about your woman shit? So I can't talk about my woman shit to black, my black man and black people. Then I can't talk about my woman shit to the white women because they have a problem with me too. So it's like, it could become very, very frustrating. And it's one of those things where, particularly for black women, you know, you've already are trying to navigate this world where people already saying that you have attitude and you're just nasty and mean, regardless if it's true or not. You know, people already have these myths about you. And even black men have myths about black women too. You know, we all come in different shapes, sizes, and colors, but most black women don't give a fuck. They're just trying to live their life like every fucking body else. But people don't see it like that. You know, they don't see you just trying to navigate this wild and crazy world just like everybody else. And it can become frustrating. It can become aggravating. It can make you angry. And, you know, I understand why, some black women get to the point of like, fuck it. Yes, I got a goddamn master's degree. And bitch, no, I'm not gonna dumb myself down. No, I'm not. No, I refuse. You know, and it's one of those things where, men have never actually been required to step their game up. Like, they've never actually, nothing has been challenged upon men like that. Women have always been challenged. Be a certain weight, be a certain size. You know, have your hair fixed this way, wear your makeup this way, your heels have to be this tall, your dress have to be like we constantly have these standards placed upon us. But when we turn around and we got demands, everybody wants to get a goddamn attitude.
Yeah, and it's also the dealing with the double oppression too, because as a woman, there's also issues too, right? So that's within the race, you have this issue between men and women and stuff, and then outside the race, you have the race issue. And that combining down on women it's like you're fighting two revolutions at once, right? Because you want to rebel against, you know, a lot of gendered violence and oppression and stuff that's out there in society, but then at the same time you want to rebel against all this racial violence and oppression that's out there at the same time. So yeah, I think also the thing she really hit on, or they really hit on, I guess, you know, at the time, like I said, there really wasn't language around this for Pauli Murray's life, but the thing that Pauli Murray really hit on was this idea that black men were not equipped to deal with this. And you know, obviously it's a dig at black men, like as you said, it can be a lot of anger and stuff. I think to this day that's why we still have so many gender wars and stuff. I mean, correct, there's gender wars among white and black people too, but you know, for some reason among black people, you know, it's really pronounced because we live it, you know. Mm-hmm. And we're all dealing with oppression of race anyway, and mm-hmm. then it's like we can't even be together on other issues. But black men have so clearly been infantilized, and we're supposed to be the leaders, the this, the that, but at the same time we're the victims, the most victim. We're, you know, when it comes to racial issues, we take the forefront and say, hey, it's really us that are the endangered species, you know. Hey, at least you're able to go get a master's degree, you know. Black men, we done, we be in prison, blah blah blah. And it's that tug of war that I think essentially stagnates all discussion, because mm-hmm. then it becomes about who's more oppressed, and with black men feeling they are firmly the most oppressed regardless of any evidence to the contrary, regardless of any of the hierarchy within the race of the oppressions that we are complicit in, you know, whether it's gendered violence, domestic violence, you know, homophobic, transphobic violence, all of that stuff. It's like none of that can count because white people hate us so much, so therefore we refuse to hear any other discussion. You know, I was looking at a video today of a this woman who her and her friend were just like exercising. They were out for either a walk or a run or something. Mm-hmm. I think they were finished running. Mm-hmm. And they were walking back to the house, and this black dude stopped and pulled over and was trying to holler at them, and they kept walking for a couple blocks, and he followed them in his car for a couple of blocks, almost to her house. And you know, they finally turned around and said, hey, we're not interested, you know. They had already told him before, but like, leave us alone. And he like, they went into the house, he got out of his car, went and was banging on their door, making all kinds of noise, talking about all the shit he would do to him. Now obviously this is not typical of every black man, blah right. blah blah, so don't mm-hmm. please don't take it that way.
But that's the thing, you never know how right. how men are going to respond, and that's the thing men don't get. The same way y'all feel about the police is how women feel about men. All y'all, majority of you are good, the 1 or 2% is bad. But instead of you calling the 1 or 2% out, everybody go, we all good. And that's not true.
Well, and it's not just that, but like within that framework, this black woman essentially has to pick, right? Because what happened next was the black dude's banging on the door, and a white woman neighbor comes out to who lives in this hotel or whatever to be like, hey, cut it out. And she doesn't know all the stuff that's happening, but she calls him a monkey and all this racist shit.
Oh, Lord, she made it worse.
Right. And the police were called. The police come out there. They don't want to believe the black woman doesn't know him. So they're like, well, you obviously know him. I don't know if that's your baby daddy or whatever, but, you know, y'all need to, you know, work this out. And she's like, you know, what do I do? Because nobody gives a fuck about us in this situation. We're the one that was threatened by this man. This man is threatened essentially by the police and by this white woman with racial violence, and obviously we're not okay with that. But what the fuck is the right answer? And at the end of the day, no one is concerned about protecting us. They want to protect this white woman. They want to you know, they want to dismiss us and put us in a situation where this man is somehow supposed to be familiar to us. He now knows where we live and shit. And
right, she was, so now, you know, I gotta fucking move.
And she ended up crying about the shit. And it really made me think about, you know, like this passage here where it's like the black men can be the abuser and at the same time be abused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that dichotomy is people, hard for yes. them to live in, hard for us to live in. And it ends up to this like almost dismissive thing of like, well, the things we do aren't really real. The oppression we participate in, the patriarchy we participate in, the stifling of our women we participate in, those aren't real. Though, you know, those the what is real is police. What's real is prison. What's real is lynching.
Because those things directly impact me.
Right. You know, and I think what's crazy is that's not just a black man thing. That's mm-hmm. that's a black culture thing, because women buy into that too, you know. It's why these hashtags on Twitter normally pop off when it's a black dude, you know. It's because it's not just a you know, it's not I mean, there's a lot of moving factors, obviously, but it's not just black men that are participating in this. Like, patriarchy, everyone participates in it. So yes, it was just interesting, man. And I don't think Pauli Murray was wrong. Like, we have not really been equipped as complete whole figures, because black men, black women, whatever, we've never really been allowed to be complete whole people.
No.
You know, even now, I would say there's a lot of things that really keep us from pursuing those higher needs, those higher, we're getting better, I think. I think there's a lot of discussion about kind of softening black men, and I don't mean that in pejorative, I mean that in a positive way.
Right.
There's a lot of discussion around that, but we're so far behind, you know, and whenever things get a little too pointed and someone wants us to take any level of responsibility, we always fall back to, well, what about racism? This isn't fair. I don't care about that. I don't want to care about that.
Yes, you know? Because you don't have to care about that. And that's the problem. And the thing you're talking about, the softening of men. And also, even with that, for me personally, and I view it differently now than I used to view that. I still would get angry, because I was like, because for little girls, you've always been taught, have compassion, care about others, put that's drilled into you. So that's why a lot of women are willing to give, they're willing to bend, they're willing to move over, they're willing to shrink this, like, they're willing to do all of this shit, because we've been told that that's the womanly thing to do, and if you don't do that, you're quote unquote not a good woman. Like, they almost like attach it to your womanhood. Right. And it could be frustrating, because men are never required to do that. So for a lot of men, it takes life experiences, it takes them losing people, it takes them getting older a lot of times before they realize, oh, I should care more about women. Oh, the world doesn't revolve around me as a black man. Oh my gosh, I'm not the only one that's oppressed. Like, it takes men longer, you know. And I sit and I watch people. It takes men until they get in their 40s and 50s and 60s. And now some men never, because I have some feminine never, where they feel comfortable enough hugging a man, telling a man, I love you, bro. Having to come, man, what's wrong with you? You know, just having those heart to heart. How you feeling today? Let's talk about real shit that impact us, versus the manly man, let's swing our dicks around and beat our chest and act like everything's okay, like we're not a whole complete human being with feelings and emotions.
Yeah, I feel like the unlearning takes much longer than the learning.
Correct.
You know,
and I can say I had to have patience with that, because I used to get very frustrated, because I was like, why do you have to get old before you get to the point that you understand these things? But like you say, you have to unlearn, just like I had to unlearn things about misogyny and all that stuff. I had to unlearn these things. And it, like you say, it takes, once something is ingrained in your heart, it's very hard to unchisel that.
Yeah, I think the unlearning is the thing that takes the most time. And it's not, like, in this case, we're talking about black men and black women in cishet situations, but, you know, the self-hate that people learn as black people, the self-hate that you learn as a woman, the self-hate people learn as LGBTQ people, you know, not to mention, like, so many of these things are reinforced in society, you know, whether it's, like, the hotep movement online that reinforces a lot of this, you know, shit, whether it's church culture, you know, white supremacy, capitalism. There's so much shit that people are consistently having reinforced these type of things. And so you walk around your whole life thinking, this is right, this is okay, you know, this is our music, this is our music, this, I mean, movies, this is like, this is our culture at this point. And the idea of questioning that, when it's also attached to what we define as blackness and what we define as men, it takes a long time. And I mean, a lot of black men don't even get the chance to get old, to have that moment, you know.
It's, right,
it shouldn't be, but it's very much a luxury to be an older black man and be able to reflect and be like, oh, I could have handled that differently. And mm-hmm. You know, even with me, like I said, I've always felt like an eyeball when it came to that kind of shit. And it's weird because people have like gravitated to me over time, but at the same time some people are just like repulsed by the idea of me, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And
because you bump up against all the norms, it's like you be like, that ain't right, and they look at you like something's wrong with you for telling them that something that they've kind of adopted and accepted is right is wrong.
And I'm confident in it, which I
right
think,
and you don't back down
because it's not like there's other men that I've been around that would say some certain shit, and you know, you get kind of peer pressured out of saying this shit, so you come, oh, you right, man, fuck them gay people or whatever. And like, you know, I've kind of not been like that for a long, you know, a long period of my life, but there's still stuff that I've learned, stuff that I didn't know. I also like pursue knowledge, you know. I think a lot of people don't really pursue shit. So I mean, shit, you can go online. So many people call themselves some label and they don't read any of that shit. They don't know any of that shit. They, you know, I'm this. And it's like, okay, cool. So what are your influences? This person I follow on Twitter, this person I read on their blog. And it's not to knock those people, but like, that's still some secondhand information. You can go get it firsthand directly from these people's mouths, you know? So I think there's also that part of it where people kind of fake the funk a little bit. Mm-hmm. And because they don't really respect, because our society is this way, we don't really respect women, and we definitely don't respect black women, pioneers as these architects of activism and all that stuff. So nobody's reading this shit. Like, everyone's always surprised when you bring up like, oh, did you know this? Cause it's always like, well, we weren't taught that in school. We were never told this shit was important. Mm-mm. And the only time it's brought up is in a rhetorical like argument about black men versus black women or some shit. It's never really said with any reverence, like, yo, you really need to learn about this person, this thing they did was dope, you know. So I think that all that stuff happens. And who's more likely to pick up that book? A black woman within the framework of how society is. And you know, a black dude, we're already told we're confident, we should know everything, and we're the real victims of all the atrocities. Yeah. So there's no need to improve yourself. Basically, you really have to get old enough to learn that you do need to do that shit,
right? And it's all a trap. It's a trap for everybody. It's a trap for the black man, because like you said, if you've been taught all your life you don't need to grow and you don't need to improve, why would you?
Right.
And it takes you getting older to realize you don't know everything, and life is a constant evolving. Women constantly evolve. We're forced to evolve regardless if we want to or not. We right. have to evolve
to survive.
Right. We have to evolve in relationships. We have to evolve when we have children, when we have grandchildren. We have to evolve at work. Like, we are like a constant chameleon. We got to change and adapt to what's around us. We shrink when we're needed. We expand when we're needed. Mm-hmm. We love when we need it. You know, we give when we need it. Like, we're required to do all these things. So these muscles, we do it by memory versus right. somebody who have these muscles and they've never had to use these muscles before. Right. And so all of a sudden they have to learn how to care, learn how to have compassion, learn how to have empathy and sympathy and understanding, you know. And some people learn to use critical thinking skills in a relationship. You have to learn these things, learn how to be a good partner, learn how to communicate, because, you know, if you've been raised, particularly men, how do you express yourself? Anger, you know.
Well, anger and humor. Like, there's you know, men are allowed to mock you, they're allowed to be silly and laugh, and they're allowed to be mad, you know. It's not a lot in between,
right?
The thing I was gonna say too, though, is I feel like women, black women especially now, are learning the lessons that boys are given late in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny, because a lot of people, what happens is when you end up fighting these gender wars, you end up hating, or, you know, like playing teams with all, this is all black, this is all white, this is all good, this is all bad. So men bad, women good, right? But what I found is that there's positive traits to all this shit. So, you know, there is something that black boys receive as children that women, that girls don't. And then later in life, you find yourself trying to find that balance. Stuff like,
yeah, you have to find a balance.
Stuff like believing in yourself. Stuff like not apologizing. Yeah. Stuff like,
that's me right there.
Yeah, but you know, stuff like, trial and error. You know, yeah, stuff like accepting that you make mistakes. You know, shit that we've been teaching our boys is part of it. Stuff like being aggressive is okay. You're not a bad person. The label of angry black woman is not a be all end all. There's situations where you can be and should be rightfully angry, and that's valid, you know? So I feel like we're all like trying to learn these lessons. If we get lucky, a lot of us, I shouldn't say all, a lot of us try to learn these lessons that we never got.
Yeah, if you want to be a better person.
Yeah, or that we were socialized out of as we grew older. So, you know, I would hope that a lot of people getting hit up with that. All right. Yeah, that was obviously the opening.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow, a reading rainbow.
Also, today's episode is sponsored. Are you into free stuff? Well, are you into free stuff? Karen, are you into free stuff?
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. I was doing a show by myself.
Oh, no.
Free stuff is awesome. But free stuff is trying to come in your house, okay? And spice up your bedroom, okay? You ain't got to worry about quarantining with this stuff because it ain't breathing, all right?
No, it's not.
You know, maybe wipe it down, you know, to be sanitary, but you should be doing that after every use anyway.
I hope so.
So they're gonna help you get free stuff at adamandeve.com, and all you gotta do is put in our code TBGWT and you can get half off of any item. Just pick the item, put that TBGWT in, you're getting some free stuff, you're getting half off. But in addition to that, they're gonna give you 10 tantalizing free gifts, a sexy item for whoever, and another special gift for whoever, and a third item for whoever, okay? And y'all will enjoy it all. Plus, they give you 6 free spicy movies and my favorite type of shipping. What kind of shipping is that?
Free
shipping. That's TBGWT, offer code TBGWT at adamandeve.com. When you go to check out, get all your free stuff, and it's going to be a lot of stuff swinging your way, hopefully. Don't really give up. Nice meeting you, so what you want to do?
I plan on making you mine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I apologize about that. I didn't want to interrupt you. My bad.
It's okay. I know you don't have to apologize. It's fine. I was just freestyling over here. All right. Where should we start? I guess coronavirus news.
The Rona news.
Coronavirus news. Let me find some coronavirus music. Where are these songs at? See, yesterday was Tom McDonald, I believe. There is one for, we already did I Mark Eyes or whatever. What about Undead Poppy and Tortvere? I don't even know how you pronounce that. I guess we'll find out. Their song is called Coronavirus, off the item Coronavirus, album Coronavirus, all in caps, by the way.
Calling me the crackers, sniffing that little guy hella molly. I just might infect your bitch, under the coronavirus. Feeding, but that's no wife, cause I need to clear my body. Triple stick, militant, under bag of chills I got. What's under the water? The claws on a fucking swatter. For the fucking bone, so close, but keep a warm. I'm a son, I'm a fucking pistol.
You want a mosh pit real quick?
No, no, thank you.
You good? Okay. I smile on my head, I just more like money, cause the party flies. Let it go at night, got it right now, meet the man. Silly, I don't bet this party blind, celebrate. You could tell the Satan was all up in that one.
I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for that.
That was definitely a song.
It was. It was. I couldn't understand none of it, but it was.
I don't know how much of that was about coronavirus.
Me either.
Maybe he had coronavirus and that was the song.
I don't know.
But Undead Poppy and Tor Tavis, congratulations.
I don't know. I just say my ears was not ready.
No one was ready.
No.
Good grief. All right. Let's see. We got news. Let's see. Grubhub driver arrested for running over Chicago restaurant owner or worker over social distancing rules. Yeah, he was arguing. They accused him of being racist. He was inside. His name is Amir Muhammad, and it was two black women that were working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were trying to stop him until the police came, because something happened in Miss T's Southern Fried Chicken in Lakeview neighborhood of Chicago's North Side.
That sounds absolutely delicious.
He got into a back and forth with the owner, Angelina Tanner. She asked him to wait outside because social distancing, he didn't want to respect that. Tanner only allows one person inside the establishment at a time. Muhammad became agitated, kicked the door, and then stormed out of the restaurant. The argument spilled outside while Tanner continued to go back and forth with Muhammad. Tanner, another employee, and Tanner's daughter, Bijan Early, all took out their cell phones to take down the driver's license plate and call the police. In the now viral video, Early is seen standing in front of Muhammad's car while the argument continues. Muhammad then runs Early over and drives off. Bijan suffered injuries to both shoulders and her pelvis and her head.
God damn.
Grubhub has revoked the driver's access to the platform, so he's now delivering for Uber Eats. So these motherfuckers are crazy over this shit.
Right. She's like, she's only allowing one person in there. You just have to wait. Like, I know that you're trying to get the food there and all that shit, but you know, it's not. And the thing is, the people that are asking is they're asking it for the safety of everybody, and people actually got them, they lose their minds because they're asking them to do a simple task.
Right. Like, that's crazy, man.
It doesn't make sense. Mm-mm-mm. And now you're going to get charged.
They're trying to save people's lives, and that makes you so mad you'll run somebody over? How? Florida scientist was fired for refusing to manipulate COVID-19 data. The scientist who created Florida's COVID-19 data portal, wasn't just removed from her position on May 5th. She was fired on Monday by the Department of Health for refusing to manipulate the data. Rebecca Jones said in an email to the U.S. Today Network that she single-handedly created two applications in two languages, four dashboards, six unique maps with layers of data functionality for 32 variables covering, and I have, guys, if you listen, I have no, there's no rhyme or reason when I say data and data. I can't help it. It just does it in my brain.
It don't matter.
Six unique.
Now, it means the same thing to me, so.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I can hear it myself. I'm just like, I don't know why I said data that time and not data. And then the next time, data, not data. I don't know. Six unique maps with layers of data, functionality for 32 variables covering 500,000 lines of data. Her objective was to create a way for Floridians and researchers to see what the COVID-19 situation was in real time. And then she was dismissed.
Yeah, because they don't want people, and that's the thing, they don't want people to know the truth.
And she's the only one working on it.
Right, and so that means once she leaves, you're not going to get these numbers. Right. Because the thing is, they don't give a fuck, they just want to open up the economy and fucking kill all the old people down there. So you telling the truth will make people stay their asses in the house.
Yeah, like that was the point. like we are firing her not as a mistake, but that is the point. We do not want people to see the truth in Florida. We want to tell them whatever it's the Trump testing thing. Mm-hmm. I'd rather not have the information.
Right, because then I'm not accountable.
Yeah, than to have it and be accountable for the information. Georgia's corona data made reopening look safe and the numbers were a lie. So Georgia attempted to do what Florida did, or did do what Florida attempted to do. I guess someone in Florida either didn't have enough integrity to fight back and get fired, or they or somehow they went around that person and ended up doing it.
Do people not put like this? I don't know everything about a lot of the stuff going on, but what I do know is that a lot of times the numbers we get are not in real time, and the numbers we get do not reflect the numbers that's going to happen in the next 2 to 14 days to a month. Like, and I think people, so the numbers are going down, okay, but what are the numbers going to look like in the next 2 weeks?
Well, more importantly, we keep saying stuff like the numbers are going down when it's really the testing is going down or the testing is going up. Like, in some of these cases, the people keep finding like, oh yeah, well, we're doing a lot of tests, and then the media writes a headline, the number jumps the most ever in New York, and it's like, that's not the same as like 14 days later in Texas the numbers jump because they reopened the economy and people were not social distancing.
Correct.
That's not the same as what people were doing in the first days of New York dealing with this, and they were just like, every day they got more tests, they were getting more positives, and people would be like, oh my god, this is the epicenter. It's like, it probably is the epicenter because it's a population center, but mm-hmm. at the same time, it's not mm-hmm. an epicenter because they're doing a whole lot of testing. It's
the testing is the good test, like, you want the numbers, and the more people you test, the numbers should go up. The thing is, if you were testing properly, the numbers, you could get a true picture on if the numbers were truly going up.
Right. So what is scary about this is because we as a populace are relying on the testing numbers, the public officials understand less testing is something that makes people more calm because they go, oh, the numbers are down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's not report that. You know, in North Carolina, there was a thing where our state, they always had the hospitals reporting in all the deaths and, mm-hmm. and hospitalizations.
Mm-hmm.
And for a couple of days, for some reason, some of the hospitals went offline and were not reporting the updates. And so people were like, oh, the numbers went down. And then when they went back up, oh, the numbers jumped up. And it's like, no, we had incomplete data for like 2 days. Now everything's back online. Nothing really changed. This, like, if you look at what it was before and what it is now, it's kind of the same steadiness. But yeah, so a lot of this stuff is flawed just because of that. But yeah, according to some data models, Governor Brian Kemp used to justify Georgia's aggressive reopening, the state's infection curve has been rapidly heading in a direction that would be the envy of states like California with its aggressive lockdown rules. The Wall Street Journal hailed the Georgia model as evidence that aggressive lockdowns were needlessly harming the economy.
I have a question.
Yes, Karen.
Wasn't Georgia one of the last fucking states to lock down?
Yeah.
And one of the first states to talk about bitch, you've been closed 2 weeks.
And the governor did not know that you could get, you could carry coronavirus with being asymptomatic.
And I don't believe that.
I don't really believe it either, but at the same time, he's so corrupt and he should not have that job, and he's so, and it's such ineffective leadership. I don't know. He might be dumb enough and believe it. He might be diabolical enough to lie about it. The thing is, I put neither one past him.
I agree.
He's a ineffective and should not have that job leader. So, like, who fucking knows? And that's one of the things I always say. Like, at some point, I don't care. Because people always people always like, well, it's incompetence, not corruption. I was like, I don't care.
Right. The results are the results.
If you shoot me with a gun, I'm not, the bullet still hurts. Like, it does, like, you know, like, this isn't a intent matter situation where, like, they were trying to do something good. Like, both of those things are inexcusable in a pandemic. But yeah, thanks to Atlanta Journal-Constitution, we now know things did indeed look too good to be true. Georgia's coronavirus numbers look so rosy because officials misrepresented the data in such a way it was difficult to believe it wasn't done on purpose.
All right. Mm-hmm. Who the man that stole the election, you think he gonna keep his number straight about a pandemic?
He could keep the number straight about voting.
Come on.
I have a hard time to understanding how this happened without it being deliberate. Microbiology and molecular genetics PhD and state representative Jasmine Clark told the Journal Constitution, literally nowhere ever in any type of statistics would that be acceptable. Georgia isn't the only state itching to reopen that has a penchant for dubious data. Florida actively tried to suppress county coroners from releasing COVID-19 death tallies. So yeah, we are fighting a war against stupidity.
Correct.
And corruption and just childish bullshit, man. Like, this is what we're up against. This is why you can't, I'm not gonna stop social distancing. I don't trust anybody at this point, because the thing I keep stressing, because I would love to go out to a restaurant again. You know, I'm reading some of the guidelines, some of the restaurants are going to install. I saw one of our favorite restaurants, they're opening back up June 1st for takeout, but then they're going to have reservation only, and they're going to practice social distancing inside of blah, blah, blah. I'm not going.
Mm-mm.
And the reason I'm not going to go is because half of the fucking country doesn't believe in science. Half of them are willfully in contempt of science. And that means those motherfuckers are going to just be amongst us. And I don't have a badge or some fucking like thing I can tell to be like, okay, this person's been social distancing, I can eat at a restaurant with them because they probably ain't got it. As opposed to a motherfucker that's been at a rally. There's no fucking, you know, like, there's not like the people at the rallies walking around in the fucking bulletproof vest with a gun all the time. You know, they're not gonna have a MAGA hat on everywhere. So yeah, I gotta stay inside. Let's see. Donald Trump slams Nancy Pelosi as sick after she called him morbidly obese. Yeah, he said he's on that hydrochloroquine, which we know has been proven not to work against this shit.
Correct.
And he's saying like he ain't worried about it because he taking that every day, and so he can't get it. And so she said that he is morbidly obese. And he was putting his health at risk with his daily dose of hydrochloroquine. One, I don't think he's on that hydrochloroquine. I think he just be talking.
Same.
And then two, people then did this thing that they always do on the left where it's like, you are fat shaming him. Okay. This is not acceptable. Okay. Just cause you don't like Donald. And I'm gonna be real with y'all. I don't give a fuck.
Same.
I don't care if it makes me a hypocrite. I don't care if I'm wrong. I don't give a fuck about this dude. Say whatever the fuck you want to say about him. Like, liberals gotta always be Batman on this shit. I don't care, dog. Like, I don't have the energy to expand on this motherfucking piece of shit and come in here and be like, well, guys, you don't have to call him, you don't have to say he has a tiny penis. Like, no, I'm good. That's not the battle I'm gonna fight. I'm gonna wait until you guys call somebody that's not the devil something, and then I'll be like, yeah, that's fucked up. But for him, no. Secondly, she's technically correct.
Right.
Which, you know, people were saying that like she's technically correct, you know, so you guys can calm down with that. And I'm like, even if she wasn't, are we really getting into this over Donald Trump? I'm not doing it, dog. He don't deserve it, you know. Like, it's not like she said the shit about Lizzo. This nigga is evil. The fuck. Anyway, his feelings was hurt. He called her crazy and shit, which I'm like, this is why you can't fuck with the Republicans, because no one's gonna get mad at him for saying she's deranged or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Republicans don't do that kind of shit. You are being ableist, saying that she is the crazy. That is not okay, Donald Trump. They will be like, yeah, crazy bitch, and then they're just gonna keep moving, and then Democrats will keep losing because motherfuckers want to be Batman, but this ain't Gotham, nigga. You need a gun, okay? Some people need shot. Coronavirus is back in China a little bit, and so they had to lock down again.
That makes sense.
Yeah, shout out to Express UK though, because they wrote this salacious headline like, mysterious new coronavirus outbreak hits China. It's like, no, it's not a mysterious new coronavirus.
Okay, because that, like, the shit was brand, I was like, did it mutate? The hell is this?
The outbreak is mysterious and new, because they thought they had really knocked it down,
right?
But it turns out it's starting to come back, and so they're quarantining all kinds of people and residents now. They've, you know, China, they it's like, we say stop, so they stopped all transport in and out of some of these provinces, and just like that, boom, 108 million people now back in the lockdown of some form, you know, which I'm not surprised at that, but I'm more surprised that they were ever out. Like, were they fully out, or was it just they were still practicing some forms of lockdown and social distancing,
right, with masks,
but now they have to do it a little bit more strict? I think that's a big you know, that's a big distinction,
because from my understanding they lifted some stuff. I don't think it was like all free range. They lifted some stuff and then shit started popping off, and they're like, nope, let's go back.
Yeah, well, it's that thing too where they say, like, you know, we will not, we for freedom in Georgia, we will not lock down. And then you look at the guidelines and it's all wear a mask, stay 6 feet apart, don't be in crowds over 50. I'm like, nigga, you are locked down. What are you talking about? And the same thing where, like, you know, some of these states that, I think Gavin Newsom was saying this on the Daily Social Distancing Show. He was like, yeah, everybody doing it though, because in California we are locked down, but you can do certain things. You know, you can still go to a park, you can still go to a beach, but we're asking you to practice social distance. So people are calling this shit one thing or another, but at the end of the day, you know, a lot of this stuff is like relative. It's not a complete quarantine, a complete lockdown, or, you know, it's not prison like people try to say. It's not all that. It's just stay in your house, you can still go grocery shopping and blah blah blah, be safe. SeaTac Airport wants I guess Seattle Tacoma Airport wants TSA to check passengers' temperatures.
Okay, that's like we said, it's not gonna matter. And, you know, y'all want to claim, you know, I heard some airports, some are requiring masks. These motherfuckers don't want to wear masks. What do you do with the assholes that's like, fuck you and your mask?
Also, like,
But
people can be asymptomatic. So, like, what is it really doing?
Just the illusion of feeling better.
Right.
Because the thing is, the woman said it was funny, and I didn't think about that. I read an article about it. It was like, it's funny how people are complaining about the mask, you know, in the airport, but yet you don't fight them when you have to go through the thing and they screen you and all that shit. People do that with no problem. All they're saying is, on top of the shit we already do, wear a mask, and people lose their mind over a fucking mask.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, I don't know, man. They don't know for sure. They haven't reached a decision yet, but they're thinking about using like a heat sensing camera to see how hot you are.
Yeah, and I could have a fever for something else, but
that you won't be matter. On a plane. I don't know what people gonna do. They wanna hop on a plane, they got a fever for anything. Like, you have a tough cold, your ass, you know. Like, are they gonna, I can see, yeah, I don't know what you're supposed to do.
Right, because a lot of things cause fevers,
right? Like, this is such a weird time, because you know, that feels like something that's not even gonna work. Like, unless there's some scientific evidence I haven't heard of, I just don't know why that would be 100% effective
because,
in this situation.
Because when it first came out, that was the number one thing: fever. So everybody was like, well, we got to be sure you ain't got no fever. But we do, but you also know that's not the only symptom. And if you're asymptomatic, my fever ain't going up, so what, bitch? I don't have a fever, but I'm spreading it like crazy.
Yeah, are they breathing?
Right,
because that seems to be a thing. That's a problem. A Maryland bar unveils social distancing tubes for drinkers. A Maryland bar unveiled an innovative solution to help patrons remain socially distant when it reopens. Inner tubes on wheels. So now you go out drinking and they put this tube around you that extends about 3 feet on all directions. And then that keeps you from being 6 feet, you know, closer than 6 feet to other people.
So now y'all gonna have them bumping into each other, fucking drunk, tipping them bitches over.
You know white people are getting drunk and playing bumper cars.
You know they are. They're gonna fuck around and they're gonna look up and somebody gonna be bouncing down the boardwalk and that shit.
I also just picture them, like, because they're further away and they're drunk, they're gonna be definitely loud talking and yelling and spraying all kinds of coronavirus over everybody.
Yes, sir.
Like, I just feel like that is definitely gonna happen.
They're gonna be drunk yelling.
They're gonna be drunk yelling, and just particles are gonna be right.
Just whole bunch of booze
all over the goddamn place, and we just got to sit there and live through it.
And they all gonna get coronavirus to each other because they all gonna be all huddled up in the same general area.
Right. how do I turn the volume down on this before it's gonna play a commercial? But yeah, there's also a Phoenix restaurant,
mm-hmm,
that said we will open up when Disney opens up.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
If the mouse ain't coming to town, the hell we open it up for?
Yeah, and of course, you know, it was a black person that said this. So damn all them, you know, that's the thing. I was like, you can't reopen shit if you can't make people reopen shit. So right. If you talking about some, we gonna reopen the country, blah blah blah, and I know coronavirus is out there and y'all niggas ain't handled it, I don't have to do shit.
Mm-mm.
Like,
so what are you gonna do, fine me for fucking not opening up?
Yeah, like if I can afford to not do it, I'm gonna not do it. It's the smart thing to do,
right? You're gonna have some restaurants that probably would just continue to do to-go orders.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, Governor Doug Ducey is urging Arizonans to be cautious. Last night, he tweeted that they should follow the CDC guidelines of social distancing and very small gatherings. Arizona is among the western states that have not seen a significant drop in infections. You can compare that to a significant drop in the Northeast and a rise in the Midwest. NBC's Vaughn Hilliard is in Phoenix. Hey, Vaughn, how cautious are businesses being there as they reopen?
The businesses are trying their best, Joshua, but the reality is, you know, the governor can tweet out urging folks in Arizona to take caution when they're out and about, but at the same time, he's essentially opened up the green light for business here. Retail, restaurants, casinos, malls are opening today. I was at a water park yesterday where several hundred folks were congregating, and you can urge social distancing all you want, but the reality of what we've seen, when you go driving down the roads at restaurants, there are folks that are gathering, that are out and about, and not adhering to that. And the even more of the backdrop in which we are working, Joshua, is the fact is that in the last 3 days, there have been 85 new confirmed deaths and nearly 1,500 new COVID cases here in the state of Arizona. I want to give you a little bit of a view of where we're at right now. That's Chase Field, where the Arizona Diamondbacks play. One block over from there is where the Phoenix Suns, the basketball team here in town, plays. This is the local AME church. This is the one church in Arizona where Dr. King actually preached. But then I want to take you over here. This is a foundation here of Arizona. This is Mrs. White's Golden Rule Cafe. I want to introduce you to two of our friends here. This is Larry White, Sr., and you're here with your daughter. Mrs. White is 97 years old, still hacking. You told me she's over at the salon.
Yes, open up today. She ran over there, 97 years old, running down the street. I said, where you going, Mom? Going to get my hair done. I said, drive your car. She said, oh, all right. Got a car, started up, rolled over there.
How long have you guys been in operation?
Since 1964.
And tell me, that is 56 years that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Put into context, what has this moment, these last two months, been like for your business?
Yeah, I got to take this off the talk now. I'm serious now. Man, it's crazy. It's the worst thing that ever happened in the United States of America. Nationwide. This is worldwide. This epidemic has taken over everything. Never seen nothing like it before in my life. You have 9/11, you have hurricanes, earthquakes, floods, fires, all that kind of stuff, but nothing like this right here. God, only God can change this and straighten this thing up. We're looking for the doctors and God to put his hand in this and straighten this thing out and bring us back to where we were before. Where we were before. Man, got all my money gone. All my money's gone. But I tell you one thing, I ain't going to open up the Disneyland open up. I tell you one thing, basketball's out, baseball's out, football's out, boxing's out, all this stuff, acting, movie theaters, all this stuff was out. I didn't think too much about it. But when Disneyland closed there, shut down Miss White. We opened up at Disneyland. But Las Vegas, I'm so sorry for you, Las Vegas. All the money y'all lose. Losing so much money. Now, us here, we do a lot of money, too. We park cars for baseball. The building's right there. He just pointed out to you. I do baseball parking. I'm letting him say something in a minute. I do baseball parking, and I do food parking. I'm losing that.
Because put into context, the governor says you can open up, but you're choosing not to open up.
I don't want to open up right now. My daughter right here, my lovely daughter right here, I got to put a mask on top of. She's very protected. Keanu White right here has children. Now, she got kids. I'd be doggone. I let somebody come here and bring the disease in here, take it down to my daughter, my grandkids. We don't have that kind of stuff. But I tell you one thing, when we open up, we will open up. We'll be ready to open up.
Joshua. You guys are terrific. We appreciate it. We had to come here because we've ordered from them. I first came here back in high school and then through college, and I've ordered from them twice this week here. You know, there are more than 400 businesses in Arizona, small businesses, that have written to the governor here. They're calling it Too Soon Arizona Group, saying that they're not opening up their business. Despite this financial hardship, you're hearing frustration here in the state of Arizona from folks like the Whites here who say, look, you know, you've had nearly 100 deaths over the last 3 days, nearly 1,500 new cases. The state of Arizona is not ready to open up. Joshua.
Vaughn, first time I go to Phoenix, I'm coming there. I'm going to the Golden Rule Cafe, and I appreciate Mr. White making the comment about not opening until bigger businesses like Disneyland open. I think that's a point well made in terms of looking at larger enterprises to see if smaller businesses like his, especially cornerstones of his community, are safe to open.
Oh, nigga, we knew you was going to the chicken. Well, you got a chance. Okay, we all
going. Chicken and pork chops. I seen
okay.
that.
Chicken and pork
we
chops.
We get to Phoenix, Arizona. We about to check them out.
My boy said, we not going. Disneyland closed, we closed. With Disneyland open, we open.
Right, because and that kind of makes sense. It's like, why are we opening up and you got like big banks and shit talking about niggas stay at home till next year? The fuck I'm opening up for?
He said he didn't really care whether it was baseball and basketball closing, but when Disneyland closed, oh, it hit different.
For real, because you was like, oh, y'all, oh, it's serious now.
Story of this guy's story been going around for a long time at this point, but Brian Hitchens, a rideshare driver who lives in Jupiter, downplayed the seriousness of the coronavirus on Facebook posts in March and April. I'm honoring what our government says to do during this epidemic, but I do not fear this virus because I know my God is bigger than the virus will ever be. He wrote in a post April 2nd, Jesus is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. In mid-April, Hutchinson, 46, began documenting his wife and his health on Facebook. Been homesick for over a week. Both my wife and I are homesick. I got no energy and all I want to do is sleep. A day later, Hitchens and his wife, Erin, were admitted to Palm Beach Gardens Medical Center, Hitchens said in a Facebook post. Hitchens could not immediately be reached for comment on Monday. The voicemail box with the number listed for him is full. There have been more than 46,442 cases in coronavirus in Florida and about 2,000 deaths reported as of Monday morning. In a lengthy post May 12th, Hitchens said that he was once among those who thought coronavirus is a fake crisis and blown out of proportion and wasn't that serious. That changed when he started to feel sick in April and stopped working. He said he had just enough energy to drive himself and his wife to Palm Beach Gardens Medical Center April 19th, where they both tested for positive for coronavirus. They admitted us right away, and we both went to ICU. I started feeling better within a few days, but my wife got worse to the point where they sedated her and put her on a ventilator.
Oh.
Yeah, she's still on the ventilator. He said he felt better on May 12th, at which point he had been hospitalized for 3 weeks, and that he still had COVID-19, the disease caused by coronavirus, but also he said he had pneumonia in his lungs. Wait, May 12th? Okay, so that was about a week ago. As of today, my wife is still sedated on the ventilator with no signs of improving. There were a couple times where they tried to start weaning her off the ventilator, but as soon as they've done that, her oxygen level dropped and they had to put her back on the ventilator full time. He said his wife of 8 years has been sick quite a few times in the past and she always fought through. This time he said, I have come to accept that my wife may pass away. Hitchens, who has seen his wife infrequently since they were hospitalized, said he was holding out hope that she would recover. This thing is nothing to be messed with. Please listen to authorities and heed the advice of experts, he wrote. We don't have to fear this, and by heeding the advice doesn't mean that you fear it. That means that you are showing wisdom during this epidemic time.
And I've always said this for some of the people. They have got to catch it themselves before they be like, oh, this shit is real. Yes, but you ain't got to tell me. You ain't got to tell me. I was like, oh, this shit killing people. I'm good. But some people are like, nope.
Looking back, I should have wore a mask in the beginning, but I didn't. And perhaps I'm paying the price for it now. If he passed the virus on to his wife, he said he knows that she and God forgive him. What if she don't though? Just think about what I said. If you have to go out, please use wisdom and don't be foolish like I was. So the same thing won't happen to you like it happened to me and my wife, he wrote. And then some people said negative things to him. To which he replied, I'm negative, praise the Lord. So yeah, man, I don't know, bro. That's terrible. Like, And that's just what it's gonna take for some of these motherfuckers mm-hmm. out here. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I hate to see it, really.
And that's
because I'm not some cold-hearted, hard-hearted person.
Me
but
either.
When I see this type of shit, man, I mean, all I could think is like, what the fuck you thought was gonna happen?
Right. What did you think was going to happen?
You can't laugh this one off, man. Just do what the people say and hope you don't get it, man. Like,
right, that's what I'm
you
doing.
You still could get it doing all this shit.
Following
you still
all
could
the
get
rules.
It. Like, at least put up a fight. This is the fight. This doesn't mean you're fearful of it. It just means you're fighting it. You know, this is what the fight looks like. And the part where you say his wife has fought off through so many diseases and been sick. Like, one, that's one of the reasons people be dying is because of that pre-existing conditions. That's mm-hmm. what it sounds like she must have.
Right.
But then two, like, the fighting with this one is not getting it.
Correct.
The fighting is the mask. The fighting is social distancing. The fighting is being smart and not going to crowded places. You know, that type of shit, man. So, man. And if she lost, I don't know how he would not feel extremely guilty if his wife lost her life over his.
Because you said he was an Uber driver, right?
Yeah, and he was flipping. He's like, I'm not wearing a mask.
Right,
I'm
so,
not
so
doing this shit.
He probably caught it and brought it back home to her.
Yeah. Governor Gavin Newsom says sports could return by the first week of June.
That's not happening.
I don't know. I don't know. Him and the governor of New York have both hinted towards that. I'm more prone to think it will happen, but only because I think they're just gonna try to limit the risk and gamble on hoping either not enough people get sick to stop them from playing, or no one gets sick. I think they're gonna do it because I think the profit motive is there.
It's gonna be interesting because players are human beings too, and they care about their health and safety too. What do you do if players be like, the fuck I'm coming back for? Like, are player, y'all gonna guarantee my safety?
Players want to play. That's one of the things. This isn't like us at home social distancing doing our jobs. Some of these players actually do want to play. I don't know how this would work. I just think, like, even the like 2 weeks that you need for an NBA season for the players to, like, you know, get conditioned and shit, how does no one get sick in that time?
Right.
Practice, you know, are there family social distancing? What if like someone has a teenager that sneaks out the house and goes to a party and that's how they get it and they're asymptomatic and blah blah blah? Like,
and my biggest thing, and I would continue to say, we don't know who's been at these goddamn protests. Mm-hmm. Like, who knows? So you don't know who,
right, the camera, the person working the camera could have been in one of the protests,
right? You don't know.
So
you don't
I
know.
You know, people lie too. There's an incentive to lie. I'm not saying it's a good idea, but I believe they will do this, or they can? Absolutely, I think they can do it. Cause you know one of the major reasons that has to be so tempting right now for them to want to do sports? Ain't nobody got shit to do. They just sitting at home. Whatever you put on TV, I don't give a fuck if it's a kid's badminton game. People are gonna be watching it live. They watch shit they know about Michael Jordan for 10 fucking hours. They watch stuff we already mostly know about this man for 10 fucking hours. And highest rated documentary of all time for ESPN.
Right, because we're in the zone.
Right. Imagine just one. It could be a random. It don't gotta be a playoff NBA game. It could just be a random fucking game. You know what I mean? The NBA could pull a fucking, like, March Madness style, we're all in the same facility, nobody fucking leaves here, like, basically the same people in the building every day, day in and day out, testing everybody with the rapid test for coronavirus every day, blah, blah, blah. The NBA could pull something like that, and everyone plays in the same arena or, you know, whatever, and people would watch the fuck out of that. I'm talking like March Madness on, like, they are playing at 2 a.m. People will fucking be up at 2 a.m. watching it because ain't nobody got shit to do.
I believe that.
So the profit motive and the incentive is right there. And I know it's killing these motherfuckers. It's not smart to do it.
Mm-mm.
But.
Because what
the
do
money.
You. Yeah, but my thing is, what do you do if one of your star players end up getting this shit and dying?
Right.
Do you just don't give a fuck?
Right. That's what they're willing to risk. Moderna's coronavirus vaccine shows encouraging early results in human safety trial. Moderna, the Massachusetts biotechnology company behind a leading effort to create a coronavirus vaccine, announced promising early results from its first human safety test Monday. The company plans to launch a large clinical trial in July aimed at showing whether the vaccine works. The company reported that in 8 patients who had been followed for a month and a half, the vaccine at low and medium doses triggered blood levels of virus-fighting antibodies that were similar or greater than those it found in patients who recovered. That would suggest, but doesn't prove, that it triggers some level of immunity. The antibody-rich blood plasma donated by patients who have recovered is separately being tested to determine whether it's an effective therapy or preventative measure for COVID-19. Moderna's announcement comes days after one of its directors, Moncef Slaoui, stepped down from the board to become chief scientist of the Operation Warp Speed, a White House initiative to speed up the vaccine development. Watchdogs, Operation Warp Speed, I'm sorry. Watchdogs called out his apparent conflict of interest, noting he owns Moderna stock options worth $10 million. Moderna also received $483 million from the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. I'll tell you one thing, man, like, I'm cautiously optimistic, but, this administration being so corrupt and so easily fooled, because they are so pressed to get like the solution, right, that they have literally done stuff like giving somebody $69 million for to make ventilators they couldn't make and shit.
They don't vet nobody,
right? I do worry about the profit motive in something like this. I hope I'm just being cynical and worried for no reason, but I worry that this motherfucker will pop up later like they never was close, or you know, they knew it was gonna take a long time, but the stock options and shit was too much. This motherfucker made $1 billion overnight,
of course.
So
yeah, and then you find out 6 months to a year later it had all these side effects, it's taking everybody out.
Right, so who knows, man? I hope it's right, but we'll see. We'll see when people start trying it. Over 180 people were exposed to coronavirus after attending a Mother's Day church service in Butte County. Yeah, man. You can't play with this shit, man. Like, it doesn't give a fuck about your mama, man.
Mm-mm. Oh no,
like the people keep coming with these emotional reasons, like, but it was a funeral. It's like, it don't care, you know, like some of this shit. I mean I understand you took a risk, but then you take this risk and then you see the fallout from it. It's like, well, what the fuck do you think is supposed to happen?
Right, it's like playing duck goose. It don't care who the goose is, my nigga.
Yeah, it don't care who the goose is, man. Like, you the goose,
right?
Like, every time, you can't beat it. So it's you know, seeing people just be like, but it was Father's Day or whatever, it's like, who cares?
Everybody getting shit, 1-800 flowers, I love you.
And then the airlines were making a policy where they were gonna, remember we talked about it, airports are gonna have everyone wear a mask, blah blah blah. Well, U.S. Airlines has now told crew not to force passengers to wear masks,
right? Because white people gonna get on there and show their goddamn asses,
right?
But you like, my nigga, it's for the safety of the crew. And if y'all do know we in a tin can that circulates the same goddamn air in circles, right? While we're in the air, you know this, right?
Once on board and off the gate, the face covering policy becomes more lenient. The flight attendant's role is informational, not enforcement. With respect to face covering policy, American told his pilots in a message seen by Reuters explaining its policy, which went into effect on Monday. The bottom line, the pilots, a passenger on board your aircraft who is being compliant with the exception of wearing face covering is not considered disruptive enough to trigger a threat one response, referring to some kind of intentional disruption by a passenger that could cause the captain to divert the flight. So they're so worried that one of these people is just going to be like, I'm gonna throw a tantrum because y'all asked me to put on a mask,
right?
So
they didn't see the protests and shit.
Yeah, so they basically been like, we're just not even gonna ask them to not wear the mask,
we're gonna suggest,
I mean, to wear the mask.
Yeah, well, they fucking heavy breathing on everybody,
right? Which is crazy when you think about it, because you know, you spend all that time telling everybody what to do.
Right, and odds are they're probably going to be some of the only people flying on the plane. And the thing is, who are these people just going to run up and jump on planes? Yes, you're going to have some people that's going to start flying, but the average person is not going to get on a airplane. They're still going to lose money. They're still going to be full, not full enough, because people are like, the fuck I'm going to get on a fucking plane for?
Well, that's the thing, though. They started flying less flights. So the end result is that those planes are still full. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are taking pictures on flights right now, being like, look at all these people on my flight. Oh my God, I thought the airline was going social distance. It's like,
okay, right, because they have less options now.
Yeah,
right.
Like, no, it's just the same amount of motherfuckers on that shit that was on there last time, dog. Like, it's all fucked up now.
Yeah, I won't be flying no time soon.
Nope. I got a free flight.
That bitch probably gonna expire.
To New York. And
yeah, I mean, we can ask.
It's got a year until it's up, and if ain't no vaccine, guess what's gonna happen? Like, I hate to do it, but that bitch gonna expire like a motherfucking some milk in the refrigerator.
I mean, we can ask. If they say no, fuck it.
I mean, ask what though?
To extend it. I mean, we can't go nowhere.
Yeah, like,
just be like, I don't want to use this right now.
Yeah, I'm not crazy. I'm like dying over this motherfucking people press to die, man, or something.
Ain't they press to death? Like, literally to death.
Like, you really don't give a fuck that much? You willing to risk it all? Oh man. All right, let's get into some other segments, guys. Wait, why is my mouse freezing? Oh, mouse, don't do this. What is going on? Just got this mouse.
Oh, you got a brand new mouse?
Yeah, I
got
the mouse.
And you got a
new yesterday.
Keyboard too?
Yeah. What the hell?
Because it kept freezing?
Yeah, I don't know.
You replaced the other one?
Yeah, maybe it's the computer or something. Like, come on, mouse. I know you can sense. There you go. It's like it wasn't sensing the pad for some reason. Anyway.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, it's working now. What was I gonna do?
messed up, didn't it?
We're gonna do
I don't know,
some games or something.
Yeah, we were?
Move
okay.
Another segment. It's doing it again. Oh great, this is the ghetto.
It doesn't need to be reprogrammed.
I don't know. All right, let's do some this will be an interesting rest of the show. Let's do some fucking with black people.
We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people.
That's right, guys. It's time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game that goes all around the globe, and we find different articles that make us feel fucked with, and we assign point scores from 0 to 100 at intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. All right, let's see who's fucking with us today. Okay, Ahmaud Arbery updates. Newly released body cam footage shows officers harassed Ahmaud Arbery and tried to tase him in 2017. Why? Yeah, November 2017, they asked him to search his car in a park back then in November. In the video, a Glenn County police officer identified as Michael Canago pulls up behind Arbery's car. The officer gets out and approaches Arbery, asking to see his license. Arbery, who steps out the vehicle, is dressed casually in athletic pants and a winter coat. He then hands over his license to the officer. After the officer returns from running his license, Arbery becomes agitated, repeatedly asking why. The officer informs him the area is known for drug activity and asks to search his car. Arbery declines the search and takes a step toward the officer, and at this point the officer calls for backup, noting Arbery's behavior was making him nervous. I'm rapping in my car to instrumentals, he insists. A second officer shows up and Arbery continues to imply there may be drugs in the car. The officers continue to imply there may be drugs in the car. As Arbery takes a step toward his vehicle, the second officer tries to tase Arbery, but the taser malfunctions. Arbery, although agitated, complies with the officer commands throughout the video. Trying to chill on my day off, he's heard telling the officers. The encounter ends with the officers letting him leave freely, but they do not let him drive his car due to a suspended license. In a joint statement made by the Guardian by lawyers working for Arbery family, they describe described the encounter as a clear depiction of a situation where Ahmaud was harassed by Glenn County police officers. Aubrey was chased and gunned down in February. Well, we know that part. So, yeah, there's a history of run-ins with the police, harassment by the police. Not, let me know if you're surprised. And then in the other update, Ahmaud Arbery, the sister of Ahmaud Arbery's alleged killer, posted a picture of his body on Snapchat.
What?
The sister of the man charged, this is what lynchings were historically. It was white people, like white people used to take pictures at lynchings, family pictures, their children were there.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen.
You know, they would fight over the remains of the body and the remains of the things used to kill the person. Wow. They would even sometimes cut the tree down, mm-hmm. and splinter the tree and then take pieces of the tree, and they would sell those as memorabilia.
What?
Yes, absolutely. This shit, I've read, like I said, I'll be reading this shit because I need to know. And I think when you know that, you don't find it so far-fetched that you'd see the body of a dead black man. Keep in mind, at the time, this was what they considered a justifiable homicide because the police were not even going to look into this thing.
Mm-mm.
So she probably, my heart of hearts is she shared this with Glee.
Yeah.
My heart of hearts is, I hate to be that cynical, I don't know this woman.
Yeah, she didn't think twice about it.
But my heart of hearts is that this is not someone saying, look at this terrible thing that happened, as much as it's like, look at this nigger we shot. Lindsay McMichael, 30, admitted to posting an unedited image of a blood-soaked Aubrey lying in the street of Brunswick, Georgia on Snapchat, but she said she meant no harm. I had no nefarious or malicious intent when I posted that picture. The thing is, I'm a huge fan of true crime. I listen to 4 or 5 podcasts a week. I'm constantly watching that sort of thing. It was more of a holy shit, I can't believe that happened. It was absolutely poor judgment.
Bitch, that's not the same. That's not the same. A lot of people listen to a lot of crew crime shit, but you know what? They ain't doing snapping pictures of real crimes.
Nobody, and I mean nobody, loves For My Man more than me. Zero people, okay? I think I might be the only person that watches For My Man.
You are. You the only one to keep the ratings up.
Okay? It's just for me. TV of one is what TV one stands for, and the one is me. If I saw the body of a dead woman laying in the fucking street, my last thing I'm gonna do is take a picture and post it to social media talking about I like true crime. That doesn't even make sense. This is not a game. You only think that if you have no fucking empathy for that body,
right? Because would you have did it if it was a white man or a white woman or a white child? Would you have taken a picture, put it on Snapchat, and be like, I watched true crime? No.
She would say yes, Karen, but we don't have no proof of that.
I don't believe you.
Right? I don't believe you. She would say yes, though. I'm sure I would have done it if it was anybody. You know, they always like that. No. Who you did it for was this black person. If it was a family member, would you have done it? Are you that big of a fan? No, because you feel empathy because you feel like you know them to a certain extent. It was more of a holy shit, I can't believe this has happened. It was absolutely poor judgment. The other thing I would throw out here too, the true crime genre is a bit of a murky thing. Because there's true crime, we all, you know, looking for LaToya's funny on Insecure and stuff. Yes. For My Man, you know, I watch these things. I'm not trying to yuck anybody's yum.
Mm-mm.
But there's a little bit of a murkiness in it because the podcasts that have really like blown up and stuff on social media and Twitter and stuff with it, a lot of these are white women obsessing over crimes of black and brown people. And so there's this disconnect there, you know, this lack of empathy for certain type of people. So, you know, you have to be careful with this shit. However, a lawyer for Aubrey's family called the image deeply disturbing. I would imagine you would find it deeply disturbing. It is. The picture Lindsay McMichael posted was very disturbing and very disturbing to the family. Attorney S. Lee Merritt told The Sun is actually fits the pattern of the McMichael family engaging in a weird violent form of voyeurism. That's the other thing too, like there's we know they've confronted this man before. Now we know the police have confronted him in 2017. The older father, who was a former police officer, was told I think he was taken off duty because he didn't complete his like gun safeties shit. Like, it's just too much shit moving on this thing. It's too unsavory, you know, and now you have this level of it. It's crazy. Then they basically go through the thing, but then she also said something else that I thought was the most ridiculous. Here it is. Oh my God. I hope you're ready. Lindsay has defended her brother and father, saying they never meant to kill anybody and they always loved her non-white boyfriends.
I don't give a fuck.
What in the Get Out? Like,
I don't care.
What in the Get Out? Like,
people act like just because you fucking black people means that anything you do towards black people is okay, and that's not true.
They have accounts on black.com, so I think we all can agree that, you know,
this and you're not the only one. There's other white women that have sex with black men, but they not justifying their deaths.
How could they possibly mean anything bad by it when, you know, they've haven't killed the black men I've brought home? The non-white. She didn't even say black. Non-white. So who knows what that means?
Right.
They didn't kill my Jewish boyfriend. I don't know what the fuck that even means, really. I've seen my brother happy in his happiest moments. I was there when he was a child and born. I've seen him in distress. And I know that look. It wasn't like some glory thing. Like, I stalked and then got the kill that I was hoping for. She said her family has gotten threats to rape and kill them since the shooting. Well, they always say that. We're not the ones on trial here. My dad and my brother are. And yes, I don't think that they were beating the hood of the truck saying, let's go get this person. Lindsay McMichael said, I think that things just really escalated. I just want people to realize they're not monsters, she said. Okay.
Yeah, because you can understand. You can, but you know, one of them got shot. Would you take their picture and put it out there? No, you would not. So no, ma'am.
Yeah.
And you inserted yourself by putting the picture on. Wouldn't nobody know who you were, bitch, until you put the picture online?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you gotta give it 100. I think every time we see this fucking story, it's gonna be 100. Jakar's, really, if I'm being frank.
Agreed.
So Jakar's for me. Ben Carson, Baltimore Black Church kicks Ben Carson off of their property. Damn.
Hmm.
That's sad to see. You know? I guess his gifted hands wasn't praying hands. They're not.
You keep them hands.
Yeah. They wasn't feeling your boy Ben.
You better leave before I put my hands on you.
Mm-hmm. Like, we ain't did that much praying up in here today. I'm gonna need you to chill out. Where the coons at? Yeah, he's apparently doing whatever it takes to defend his boss, even if that means embarrassing himself in the process. According to The Atlantic, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development was setting up for a press conference in front of Morningstar Baptist Church of Christ in Baltimore, Maryland, but that was quickly shut down before he and his crew were told to get off the property. Gregory Evans, who was a member of the church for more than 50 years, pondered why Carson or his team never asked permission to be at the church.
So they didn't even ask. Yeah, you didn't even ask us. No, you're not using us as a backdrop.
Yeah, I think we know why they didn't ask.
Because they told them no.
Yeah, I think that's why you don't ask. Better to ask forgiveness than permission, I think they say. Because they knew that it wasn't enough church in the world to let that come up in Baltimore. He is using it as a photo op to make it look like they are doing something, he said. Why did someone come to our church property without permission? This community needs some support on all kinds of issues, on dilapidated housing and everything else. All of a sudden, you're going to show up on our property and not even ask permission to be here? Carson acknowledged that he was required to vacate the church grounds and complained on camera. It's a church, he said to CBS Baltimore after the incident. And they say, get off my property. A church. This is the level to which we have sunk as a society. Carson, similarly to Donald Trump, also insulted Baltimore by revealing that when he worked for the city, he was afraid to send kids home to where there were rats, roaches, mice, and ticks, where there was just unabated lead poisoning that was having devastating effects on the mental development of young people. He then brought it back to his religious beliefs. Somehow, I guess that's how God works. I ended up as Secretary of HUD, and we can actually deal with these issues. As he does the exact opposite.
Don't deal with the issue. He does defund
Go ahead, child. Go ahead. Go
defund
on.
Everything. Mm-hmm. You defund everything, and you act like everything is their fault.
Right. So yeah, that just 0 to 100, Karen.
Oh, that get at your cars. You didn't ask because you knew they're gonna tell you no. Then you got offended that they told you to get off their property. You had no permission to be there.
Yeah, Jakars. Ben Carson's a constant Jakars at this point. I'd love to have him see him in the street so he could catch these gifted hands. You know what I'm saying? Maryland governor vetoes bill that would have provided $577 million to state HBCUs. On May 7th, Larry Hogan, the Republican governor of Maryland, vetoed legislation that would have ended a 14-year-old lawsuit and would have provided $577 million to the state's four historically black universities. Yeah, his explanation is the economic fallout from this pandemic simply makes it impossible to fund any new programs, oppose any new tax hikes, nor adopt any legislation having a significant fiscal impact, regardless of the merit of the legislation. So, it's a 14-year-old lawsuit, y'all. So I'm gonna do the math. We've had coronavirus in the U.S. that has been acknowledged by this Republican and the Republican administration for approximately about 2 months. So let's take that 2 months out of the equation. What happened to the other 13 years and 10 months where there wasn't a pandemic and the bill was due? These motherfuckers, boy, I swear to God. Yeah, man, we're not gonna be able to. Oh, it's crazy. I would love to pay it too, y'all. It's just, we ain't got it during the pandemic. You should have hit me up last week. Nigga, we've been hitting you up for 14 years worth of weeks. Where are what is this? Jakars as well. Mm-hmm. Man, everything, Jakars. These are terrible stories today, guys. I'm sorry. But, I gotta keep it real. We gotta talk about it, okay? Alright, let's move into another segment. Trying to think what we should do. I know tomorrow we have Tea with Queen and Jay on, Queen and Jay from that podcast on. Mm-hmm. So I might save some of these news articles for them. I guess we can either play Guess the Race or do some white people news. What do you prefer?
I want to do white people news.
All right, Karen wants to do white people news. Mm-hmm. So let's check out.
After all the Jakars is yes, white people news.
All right, not a problem. So let me see if I can find a song that I want to play. All right, cool, here we go with some white people news. Let me share my screen.
Okay,
because I know you guys want to see the video for the song. All right, and here we go. Why is it so quiet?
Oh, don't say it, cause you know I'm cute. Louis down to my drawers, LV all on my shoes. I'll be dripping so much sauce, got a boy looking like ragu. Lit up like a crystal ball, that's cool, baby, so is you. If I'm shining, everybody gonna shine. I was born like this, don't even gotta try. I'm like Chardonnay, get better over time. I heard you say I'm not the baddest bitch you like. It ain't my fault that I'm out here getting loose. Got to blame it on the juice. Blame it on my juice, baby. The proof. Got to blame it on my juice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. sick, don't dare try to cop a feel. The juice ain't worth the squeeze if the juice don't look like this. Hold up, baby, please don't make me have to steal your chick. If I'm shining, everybody's gonna shine. I was born like this, don't even gotta try. I'm like Chardonnay, get better over time. I heard you say I'm not the baddest bitch alive. It ain't my fault that I'm out here getting loose. Got to blame it on the goose. Blame it on the juice, baby. It ain't my fault that I'm out here making news. I'm the pudding and the proof. Got to blame it on my juice. In your hair.
What?
Come on, let me hear you sing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And all the fellas looking fly with these spats and bow ties. Come on and let me hear you sing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what? I ain't gonna lie. They had me in the first half, but then I totally bought in by the end. Great Gatsby style cover.
Big brass band. Yeah. And he was pronouncing all the words. He read all the syllables.
Mario Jose on the vocals. Julian Tanaka on the clarinet.
Yes. Blame it on the juice.
You know what? I'll allow it. Congrats. Good job. It's not better than the original, but mm-mm. I like the twist. I like the Great Gatsby's 1920s.
Come on.
Sounds that
banjo and a live band was getting in the background.
Yeah, once the bass and that drums and once all that kicked in, I was in. Mm-hmm. I don't know, came front. Guys talk about that Shiles man Trump. Trump's would-be new spy chief tried to delete his internet history, and it went about how you'd expect. This asshole.
Impossible. I don't know much about computers, but I heard that shit's on there forever, ever. Unless
well,
you know what
the
you
thing
doing.
Is, if they, it's too late if they get to you when they hear about you. This is something you have to do, like, long before anyone knows who the fuck you are, what you're up to. Yeah. So,
all they did was retrieve everything and it just popped right on back up.
Right. And it just tells you the kind of person that he is, that these are the people he picks. His biography section on his house website was changed back away from claims that he put terrorists in prison and arrested 300 illegal aliens in a single day. So I guess he took that out, not to mention a review of his record has raised serious doubts about both points. Last fall, his website says a U.S. attorney and federal terrorism prosecutor Radcliffe put terrorists in prison, arrested 300 illegal aliens in a single day, and cracked down on the drug trafficking and public corruption.
That's a lot of people in a single day.
Now it says as a U.S. attorney, Radcliffe serves the chief of anti-terrorism and national security for the Eastern District of Texas, coordinated an operation that led to the arrest of 300 illegal aliens in a single day and cracked down on drug trafficking and police corruption. Around the same time, references to his contested role in a high-profile terror financing case likewise disappeared. Those posts referred to a decade-old case against an Islamic charity called the Holy Land Foundation, whose members were prosecuted for giving material support to the Palestinian group Hamas. As recently as February 20th, A press release from 2015 on Radcliffe's House site said he convicted individuals funneling money to Hamas. A separate post on Radcliffe's official campaign site from 2016, which was still up recently as November, said in 2018 he served by a special appointment as prosecutor of the U.S. versus Holy Land Foundation, one of the nation's largest terrorism financial cases. But now both web addresses return 404 messages, according to captures from the Wayback Machine. So I guess he was embellishing his role and the results of these cases. So
that makes sense.
I mean, that's what Trump does. I feel like that is how you get his attention.
That's on brand.
Donald Trump orders his Mexican wall to be painted black at the cost of $3 billion more, insisting that it will attract the sun and make it hot to touch so people won't be able to climb it.
Oh, word.
In the summer months, by the way.
That's how it works?
In the summer months, keep in mind, y'all. In the summer. So, I don't know, last time y'all checked, that's one season of the year. So, it'll be, according to him, harder to climb for about 4 months.
Out of the 12.
Okay.
a quarter of
for
the
about
year.
Like 3 to 4 months out of the 12, it's going to be a motherfucker to climb.
The rest of them?
This idiot.
Climb on over.
Top Republican fundraiser and Trump ally named Postmaster General, giving president influence over the Postal Service. And what are we relying on in November if there's COVID? Mm-hmm. Mail-in ballots.
Oh, they're going to shut that shit down. They're going to defund the hell out of them.
Trump is getting trounced over. Well, I'm not going to say that. I hope they can't, Karen. I hope we fight it. I know they're going to do everything they can. That's why voting is important, man. You know? Trump is getting trounced among a crucial constituency, the haters. Basically, they just pointed out what, you know, a very intelligent podcaster told you guys literally months ago at this point. But Biden's doing better with Trump to a large group of voters who disliked Hillary Clinton.
Yes, because he's a man.
Right. Now that's why he beat Hillary Clinton, is because of the dislike vote. And the people that, you know, I'm going to go vote, so I'll vote for Trump because fuck Hillary. Now Biden is winning that demographic, which tells you everything about turnout, everything about why Trump is deathly afraid of him in the general election, and all that stuff. Trump fired State Department Inspector General right as it looked like he was investigating, I think, Pompeo or something like that. Like, so many of these motherfuckers, you get confused, but.
Yeah, don't try to do your job or you got to go.
Yeah, and they're saying it was over, like, the fact that Pompeo had a government employee doing personal things for him, like, you know, running errands and shit. You're not supposed to be doing that.
Right, my job is to stay here and protect right. you.
So but I don't even know if that's the truth or the cover story, but that's what that's what they're saying. Like, this is what got him fired. And it's like, one, that shouldn't be a fireable thing if that's what the fuck he was doing. But two, is that the truth or was it something deeper? You never know.
Never know.
Grossly incompetent. Trump dismisses Obama over coronavirus criticism. Yeah, he's just looking in the mirror. Whatever Obama says about him, Trump goes, no, and then, you know, we're supposed to act like that's okay. And lastly, Trump is refusing to unveil Obama's portrait at the White House, breaking a 40-year tradition.
Of course, he don't want anything with him around. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Obama will also not be interested in attending such an event, so what's the fucking point?
Right.
And for people that say, oh, Barack Obama, this, that, and the other, Barack Obama has said the shit that y'all wanted him to say, and Trump has reacted the way that I fucking knew he would react. So, balls in your court.
Right, and
go vote. No, like, Obama's not treating this like status quo. He's not going to the portrait unveiling and all the shit y'all said he would do. When they go low, we go high. Okay, so he's going low the way you want. You know, he's not calling him a nigger or whatever the fuck y'all, you know, what delusional fantasies y'all have of this man. But he is clearly in opposition to this man and treating it as an unprecedented situation. I'm gonna need y'all to react accordingly and take your ass out and vote and shut the fuck up. All right, now let's get to the more gentler white people news, guys. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Zolciak celebrates her 42nd birthday by showing off her surgically enhanced body. Why they had to add that part? In a bikini. Holy shit, that used to be so old me. Kim Zolciak,
she wants you to know she had surgery, or she wants you to know she had surgery.
Yeah, I don't know, she brought it up or they did,
I don't know, but she looked like a made like a Barbie doll right there.
Kim Zolciak turned 42 years old Tuesday, and the Bravo star knew exactly how to celebrate. The blonde bombshell, who's a mother of six, shared a stunning portrait to her 3.1 million Instagram followers, where she was posed in her salty K-swim bikini by her swimming pool on her Georgia mansion. I can't believe I'm 42. Like, holy shit, that used to be so old to me when I was in my 20s. Now I know it's young as fuck. Heart emoji. Began the Real Housewives of Atlanta star. Oh, that's the white woman from Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
I'm so thankful to see another year to spend this time with my incredible husband, six wonderful children, my amazing friends, and so many others that bless my life every day. Is she still on Real Housewives? I thought they had, like, you know what, though? They like the Avengers. You
they
never
bring
know.
Bring people back, take them off, who knows?
You never know who's in the group at the time. Mm-hmm. It really just depends on which comic book and
you
movie.
Reading, right. What version of it you're reading. They bring them back and on, and then they'll be off and they'll come back.
It's like, oh, I think Iron Man fell out with Captain America, and then, you know, Thanos hits and they show up. She then went on to say this year has not been an easy one thanks to COVID-19 pandemic, and she was so ready to see 2019 go, but she's also incredibly thankful for 2019. Kim then noted that in 2019 she decided it was time to chase another dream of mine, and that dream is designing swimwear. Well, I mean, if you're gonna put it on your enhanced cakes, sis, it's gonna all look good.
Yes, sir.
That's the trick. That's how they begin people to buy shit. And be like, look at this. This bikini looks great on Kim Kardashian. It's like, oh, I'm gonna get it. It's like, you're gonna need about $300,000 worth of surgery to go with this dress. I'm like, oh, you got me. You got me. It didn't look like that when I got it out the box. Mm-mm. My love of the ocean and my passion for swimwear is now at Salty K Swim. All started Salty K. What way to go with that, I wonder?
Mm-hmm.
Saltine like cracker, maybe? I don't know. Noted the star, who often travels to the Caribbean, and said, I can't wait. Then the TV vet touched on sustainability. I love the ocean so much that I want my children, my grandchildren, and future generations to enjoy them as much as we do now. So when creating Salty K, my fabrics were important to me, and said the Don't Be Tardy star. They are sustainability sourced and ethically produced. Even my tags are made from recycled paper. Can't wait to see what you think. This comes a month after Kim modeling a lilac suit on Instagram, which won her raise. The day before, 23-year-old daughter Brielle Bierman posted in one of Zolciak suits to her 1.3 million followers. So I guess this is the other swimsuit. So.
Yeah, I don't like that swimsuit. And this I like that one better, but that's
her daughter in this one.
Okay, because that first one looked like somebody put some paper plates. What the hell is that?
I don't know. It looks like the lingerie you buy from those like those stores that you see like in the, you know, just I forget what they're called. Oh, why am I drawing a blank? It's not a lingerie store. Something's End. Anyway, it looks like one of those.
Secret's End or something like that?
I don't think it's Secret's End. Okay. Something's End. It's not Secret, though.
Infinity End?
Nah,
or?
It's not Infinity End. It's something else. It's just, it's like a woman's name and then a thing. And I don't remember what the name of them are, but.
Yeah, somebody said Spencer's Gifts.
That's nah, it's not one. That. It's not that. No. It's a woman's name and then a thing. I don't, it's not important, guys. Don't worry about solving this equation. it was white with a wide bottom top and bottom. Brielle did indeed look sun-kissed to perfection. She posed in her little two-piece that made the most of her hourglass figure. Yeah, and then she's holding some product up at the same time, because you know that's what they be doing on the gram, man. I gotta step my gram game up.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm just gonna pretend to be advertising products so it make me look like I'm an influencer when I'm not. I think that's the move, and I'm just gonna add to people. You know what I mean? At Lysol, your boy in the house just spraying off these haters or whatever.
Keeping it clean.
And then they'd be like, Rod got a deal with Lysol? He's more popular than I thought. Law and Order.
New session.
Oh, okay. Let me go to new session. Matter of fact, pause. Sorry about that, guys. I didn't see we were getting cut off. Anyway, back to white people news. Christopher Maloney, Law and Order SVU star, compares Trump supporter kids to Nazi youth. The actor who plays Elliot Stabler on the show was responding to a video of two young boys speaking about how much they love Trump. In a video that appears to be scripted, I heard this video on, I think Three Guys On maybe or somewhere.
I haven't heard yet.
These fucking kids, they are clearly acting, you know, kids don't care about this shit. They're children. Right. Like, they only talk like this when their parents are like, you better say this shit, boy. And that's exactly what happened. I'll see if I can play the video, but it's so fucking, like, it's not even adorable. It's just stupid. Like only what white person saw this and went, yeah, that's real.
Antoni Ann, I've been stuck inside for too long. Give me some good news.
I have great news for you. Do you know it is only 100 days till the national convention?
100 days?
It's 100 days.
Is President Trump going to be there?
He is going to be there. Is that so exciting? Do you guys like President Trump?
Yeah.
You do? What do you like about him?
It's because he fights for our freedom. And he keeps us safe.
He does fight for our freedoms and keep us safe. And that is the thing we're going to do. And we are so excited about President Trump because what has he done for our country?
We are stronger. We are tougher. We are winning. We are keeping America first.
Corny.
Yeah, it is. And
watch the black kids on TikTok and take lessons. This is corny.
Very, and it shows you the propaganda and how they get their kids and brainwash their kids really early, and these are going to be somebody's mayor, senator, governor, lawyers, or somebody.
And Christopher Maloney retweeted it and said, so cute. Not since watching Nazi youth newsreel footage have I felt this way. How Trump. So he shitted on that.
Tell that gate on them lines.
He shit on that woman and them kids.
That's because it's stupid.
Oh man, Chris. Allow me to read you your rights and your lefts as you get directions to the cookout, Chris. That's right. We shitting on white children now. I didn't know you got down like this. He said them little motherfuckers look like Hitler Youth.
That dude was brainwashing.
Oh man. That was some JoJo Rabbit shit though. They gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
Get the fuck out of our face. Make them kids. I feel bad because they're clearly indoctrinated by their parents, but yeah, that's fucked up. Queen Maxima of the Netherlands reveals her recipe for favorite cookies to celebrate her 49th birthday.
Oh shit.
Let me tell you something. Salt and pepper to taste. Okay. Queen Maxima of the Netherlands has delighted royal fans by sharing her mother's recipe for her favorite cookies. The royal, who was born in Argentina, posted instructions to Instagram to mark her 49th birthday, which she spent at her home in Huis Bosch in The Hague. Glamming up for the occasion, King Wilhelm Alexander's wife sported a stunning golden one-shouldered blouse with an eye-catching cutout feature while holding a tray of baked goods.
Now, I do like the way that dress cut.
Mm-hmm. Why do them cookies look like that?
I'm assuming they must not be baked.
All right, let me read this then. Okay, so you need to preheat the oven to 160 degrees. It's gotta be Celsius.
Correct.
In a bowl, mix all. Well, you lost me already. My oven don't do that. We lost in a bowl, mix all the ingredients with, I can't follow any of this. 300 grams of cornstarch.
Yeah, you know, we Americans, we do foot and inches.
The only thing I know
tablespoons.
Here is 4 egg yolks, a teaspoon of sodium bicarbonate.
Yeah, you know.
What is sodium bicarbonate?
I don't know. It's something on the periodic table.
Right. Like, you making, what are you making?
Somebody said, they said in chat room, baking soda.
Oh, they call it sodium bicarbonate over there?
They must call it its real name.
Shout out to the whites.
I just know you by your nickname. Call it baking soda.
I see you, player. Sodium bicarbonate. Okay, we stand a smart queen. 2 teaspoons of baking powder, small vanilla pod or a pinch of vanilla powder, 1 lemon grated. You grate a lemon? Mm. 1 teaspoon of cognac. Well, hold up, player.
You got me at cognac.
I'm not gonna lie, they had us in the first half.
That makes sense. She meant zest. That's what that meant when they said shredded. They meant like the
1
zest.
Lemon grated?
Yes. That makes sense. I was like, the hell is this? That's gonna be some sour ass cookies.
Well, let's see. Preheat the oven, mix all the ingredients with the soft butter, add egg yolks and cognac, and knead by hand into a firm, form a ball, let it rest for about an hour if the dough doesn't appear to be sticking together. Then add 2 teaspoons of lemon juice. Roll out the dough into a 5 millimeter to 7 millimeter shape. Cut out the circles with a glass of about 4 centimeters in diameter, and then place the cookie dough pieces on a baking tray lined with baking paper about 2 centimeters apart. Bake the cookies for 10 to 12 minutes at 160 degrees. The cookies should discolor a little, but not too much, otherwise they become too dry and break. Take them out of the oven and let them cool before sticking 2 cookies together with a layer of dulce de leche. Spread the dulce de leche on the edge and roll it in a grated coconut.
That's something with milk.
Yep, something with milk. So yeah, good for her, man. Okay, y'all can get like the what was she again? Queen. Get like the queen. Mm-hmm. She out here baking these cookies, y'all. Let's see what else we got here. Southern Charm star Shep Rose, 40, confirms he is dating Taylor Ann Green. As a cuddle on an Instagram photo. I guess the secret is out. Southern Charm star Shep Rose has been involved in a new romance for the past several months, and on Sunday that relationship was confirmed by his new lady love on social media. The 40-year-old reality TV star has been seen cuddling with his girlfriend Taylor Ann Green in an Instagram post shared this weekend. I guess the secret is out. P.S. Those bruises are from surfing, I promise.
I'm glad somebody excited, because I don't know who they are.
Oh, Taylor is such a cad. Taylor catching the image with Shep.
Trying to be like, it ain't because I'm smacking that ass.
Oh, wait, is Taylor a woman? Which one is Shep?
I don't know.
Shep Rose.
I don't know. Men like their ass smack too, so ass smacking could go either way.
For the other, his girlfriend. Okay, so Taylor's the woman. She's the one that said, oh, I guess the secret is out. P.S. Those bruises are from surfing, I promise. She captioned the image with Shep. Let's see. And then Shep said, we're just promoting the hat. No, wait, she said, we're just promoting the hat, she wrote, tagging his brand of Shep gear. He got his own gear. People be wearing this shit. Wow.
Why people out here doing all types of fancy shit, making millions, and you be like, and who are you again?
This is a stark contrast to her statement in April that the two were just friends. Taylor graduated from Appalachian State in 2015 and now works as associate staffing, according to her LinkedIn page. In the past, she has worked at Courtyard by Marriott, the Biltmore Company, and Diverset. She was a student and leader with Youth with a Mission in 2016. And in the past, Shep has dated Catherine Dennis from their show Southern Charm, as well as Bella Clark. In 2019, he was the center of a scandal when he made fun of a woman who was collecting cans. The 40-year-old reflected on the backlash he got. It was tough on me, but it was tough on people that I love, you know. He explained to people, so that part was just really difficult to get through. I hope I never have to be involved in anything like that again.
Me either, sir.
Sound like he really went through a time, y'all. okay? I mean, we need to think about, what about the white men? Okay,
what about them? They have a hard time, apparently.
They pick on women with cans, and then they get this unfair backlash that affects not just them, but what about the people they love? Have y'all thought about that when y'all are harassing these men over picking on people over cans? The Bravo Star said, that was like a really dark time, but it lasted for a few weeks to where I could just think of nothing else. He went on, it just really sucks. And of course, I had no one to blame but myself. Absolutely no one, so that makes it even harder. In August, he posted an Insta Stories footage of an apparently homeless woman on a New York sidewalk who covered her face and repeatedly said, no, look at me, nice cans. I mean, the cans that you have. Shep called out to her using the camera to reveal plastic bags loaded with soda cans. Shep wrote in the caption over the clip of his stories, I love double entendres. Yes, she was camera shy, but she laughed. And then the internet got a hold of your ass.
All right, that's not like harassment, sir.
Right. I just don't understand why I, as a rich southern white man, have to deal with so much in the city. This is why I hate New York. The reality star drew outrage on Twitter and was initially defiant, telling those upset to unfollow him and saying, I am not responsible for your happiness. More, maybe you guys should kick this can down the road. It sounds like you guys want me to get canned from the network.
Yeah, so.
More recently, he told people of the video, I so regret that. I hate being the architect of my own demise. You know what I mean? Shep continued, I don't know what to say other than I was walking down the streets of New York with friends, taking pictures and videos. It was just like a frenetic thing. I did not think about the consequences or the details or the consequences. I still am regretful. A lesson he drew from the experience was, maybe try to focus on things that are beneficial to you, not just, you know, getting hammered in New York. You know what I mean? And that's sort of the crux of it. Not saying I'm a saint, and I'm not saying I'll ever be a saint, but just try to make little adjustments, fine-tune stuff. I've never watched this show, as you guys can probably tell, but that's what they sound like to me. I also love how he gave us that, you know, beautiful lesson, guys. You know, how many of us have dealt with that, you know? Well, you got to learn to refocus yourself and not just get hammered on in the streets of New York. You know, like, haven't we all been there? It's like, I need to refocus myself. Stop picking on homeless people and putting on Instagram Live. So hopefully people are learning that in white people news.
I hope so.
Brody Jenner goes shirtless as he hits crowded Malibu beach with mystery blonde bombshell just 9 months after his shocking split with Caitlyn Carter. Now, is Brody Jenner one of them Jenners?
That's what I was about to ask you.
And then they don't know this woman's name, so now she gets to be mystery blonde. That's the really the shadiest thing they can say about you, mystery man.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't even worth us trying to find who you are. Oh, and they said yes.
Okay, he announced his shock split with Caitlyn Carter back in August, but Brody Jenner seems to be starting off summer 2020 with a new blonde bombshell. The 36-year-old reality star was seen holding hands with a mystery blonde bombshell at the crowded beach in Malibu on Sunday. Crowded? God damn it.
No social distancing, apparently.
Yeah. That's them chilling. The two certainly seemed cozy as they splashed around in the water together before laying out on the sand next to one another. Brody went shirtless in a pair of blue striped shorts along with a black baseball cap. His stunning companion sported a skimpy black thong bikini. There they go in the water. Splooshing around. Who wears a hat in the ocean?
For you to lose.
No doubt the pair was excited as it was the first week after Los Angeles.
Somebody trying to hide that hairline.
True.
Other than that, the hell you got a cap on for in the water?
No doubt the pair were, well, you know what? Probably ain't been able to get haircuts.
Oh, true.
The pair were excited as it was the first weekend after Los Angeles County reopened the beaches amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The outing came just 9 months after ending his long-term relationship with Caitlin Carter. Brody began dating Caitlin in 2013 and 5 years later had a lavish wedding ceremony with her in Indonesia. I guess there's more pictures of him on the beach. They got a dog with him. It emerged at the beginning of last August that Brody and Caitlin had decided to call it quits on their romance. I like how they didn't really talk about anything that happened at the beach with this new woman. They were just like, remember when this nigga broke up with Caitlin? Now see, that was a story. The plot thickened when further details surfaced indicating that Brody had declined to ever legally marry Caitlin. In fact, the relationship fell apart specifically because Brody's refusal to make the marriage legal and had a baby with Caitlin and to have a baby with Caitlin. So he was like, I'm not trying to get trapped. Okay, Caitlin, you done fucked up. So this is Caitlin and him back in the day. Oh, Brody kind of a handsome man. He looked like he got that lead singer of Color Me Bad beard going.
Duh.
You know? Oh, Caitlin, girl, you never had a chance. You see that blonde bombshell he was with?
Mm-mm.
Where are your surgeries, sis? Do you want to keep up in this game or are you bullshitting?
Apparently.
Have you not seen what his family is up to?
Yeah,
the legitimacy of their marriage has become a matter of public debate, but for he and I was very real, she wrote in the L that autumn. He was quite possibly the most beautiful man on the planet with a heart of gold and a tireless sense of adventure. I was drawn to his spirit. After a breakup with Brody went public, Caitlin embarked on a brief whirlwind romance with Miley Cyrus. Oh,
she must have been in some of them pics when Miley Cyrus was out here taking your woman.
Yo, she was the one that Molly, one of the ones,
because
you know Molly gets around. Okay, listen, Molly fucks. Okay, I call her Molly Sire ass. Okay, because she will get up in it. After Caitlin breakup, Brody had a fling with 23-year-old Playboy playmate Josie Canseco, the daughter of ex baseball and steroid icon Jose Canseco, a steroid icon.
A legend.
The shake.
Your fave could never.
You know he in the hall of steroids, right? The rumors abound that Brody and Caitlin had conducted an open relationship, and she touched on the subject on the Hills New Beginning finale last September. Oh, is she from the Hills originally, or did they reboot the Hills and she's on it?
Oh, they reboot.
She was asked in a confessional if Brody slept with other women and replied, not without me being involved. Hey, sis, I see you. Okay. Kayla insisted that everything with me and Brody is under my control, but maintained the world isn't necessarily ready to hear about all that. Well, girl, you're telling us too much. I feel like we did hear about it.
Oh, somebody said it was original. My bad. I don't know.
Hey, we don't. We just making it up.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Otis and Doug Hanner changed their newborn's name from Hayes to Hendrix. They welcomed their second son, Hayes Douglas Hanner, into the world last Wednesday, and after just a few days, married at first sight, Jamie Otis and Doug Hanner have announced they're changing the baby's name. The couple took to Instagram Live to reveal their legions of followers that they had now changed his name to Hendrix Douglas. Okay.
Aww.
That's cool. Maybe for Jimi Hendrix. Like maybe it was Purple Haze, so they said Haze and they changed it to Hendrix. For Jimi Hendrix. I don't know. This is all my guess.
I don't know.
The minute we had our son, the minute he came out, even before the first time I looked at him, I almost called him Hendrix. We named him Hayes before we met him. We both really liked the name Hayes too. Doug later added he accidentally and coincidentally also called Hayes Hendrix during his birth. Jamie explained that she felt pressured to make a decision when it came to his name and she thought it would help her bond more with her son ahead of his birth. Jamie and Doug made the final decision on Saturday when they were filling out Hendrix's birth certificate. His new and more fitting name is also a connection to Jonathan, the son that Jamie gave birth to at 17 weeks old in 2016. The baby naming expert told the reality stars that Hendrix was loosely connected to their late child.
Oh, the other baby must have passed.
Oh, okay. Jamie and Doug asked their fans back in January their thoughts on regarding their son's name. In the mix was Hayes, Hendrix, Hudson, and Hunter. They wanted an H name to match their daughter, Henley Grace, who's two. The couple welcomed Hendrix to the world via water home birth last week in New Jersey. He's so perfect. He looks just like his big sister, Gracie. The couple said in a joint statement to People, we're in this together, you and me, baby Hayes. Jamie wrote on social media on Saturday, I feel so blessed to get to be a mommy again. So they're from Married at First Sight and they got two children. So like, are they from like an old ass season? Like they've been together.
I got two kids.
That's dope. Oh yeah. They tied the knot married at Lifetime's Married at First Sight on in 2014. So this is like a real one. Yeah, like this is like they took that shit for real. Good for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, I just love to see the whites winning, you know? We just do not see enough of that in society these days. So,
I'm glad they are too.
And they not being problematic, okay? They not out here marching telling us to reopen the country and nothing.
Mm-hmm. See, that nobody had my baby at the house.
Speaking of which, Bachelor alums Jade Roper and Tanner Tolbert are expecting baby number three.
Oh shit, number three?
One Bachelor family is about to get even bigger. On Monday, Jade Roper and Tanner Tolbert announced they are expecting their third child with a sweet family photo on Instagram. The pic includes the whole family, kids included, all piled up on dad Tanner posing with an ultrasound photo and a pregnancy test. The married couple who met on Bachelor in Paradise are already parents to daughter Emerson Avery, who is two, and 9-month-old son Brooks Easton. Jade posted the announcement on Monday in the photo. Tanner is laying on the floor holding the positive test and ultrasound photos while the family is piled on top. She wrote, here we grow again. It feels good to be able to finally talk about this pregnancy. The reality star went on to note that she'd been absent from social media to deal with nausea and fatigue in addition to caring for two young kids during the coronavirus pandemic. Although this time has its uncertainties, Jay wrote, she and her husband were so thankful and excited for this baby. I truly believe babies being born during this time are here for a special reason to be the light workers. The couple also noted that they are beyond happy to love another baby and to give Emily and Brooks another sibling to have our children be so close. Tanner reposted a baby announcement on his Instagram story writing, oops, we did it again. Oh, aww. Incorrigible. Jade, who placed fourth on Chris Soules season of The Bachelor, and Tanner, who competed on Caitlin Bristow's season of The Bachelorette, first connected during the second season of The Bachelor in Paradise. The couple tied the knot in January 2016 and welcomed their first child, Emily, in 2017. In an uncertain time to be expecting a new baby, but The Bachelor, it's an uncertain time to be expecting a new baby, but The Bachelor couple are no stranger to disruptive plans. Last year, the reality stars welcomed a baby boy, but the birth did not go as expected, and Jay delivered the baby inside the couple's Southern California closet with the help from medics and firefighters.
Holy shit.
Yes. The Bachelor star posted a photo holding a newborn son at home on Instagram writing, it was one of the scariest moments of my life because I felt so out of control. But that she was so incredibly grateful for the support system she had. Damn, she had that baby in the closet.
Yeah, babies don't give a damn about your schedule.
That's true. That is what they say. All right. That was a lot of white people news, okay? White people podcasting news. Y'all, the whites, they know how to do it.
Okay.
Joe Rogan strikes a deal with Spotify. It is reportedly worth over $100 million.
I guess they paying over there.
Same Joe Rogan that just had a clip that went viral today of him talking about he believes in Obamagate.
What?
The one that everyone told me was pivotal to the election and was going to vote for Bernie Sanders. That's what I was told.
He was never going to vote for Bernie.
And we need to reach his demographic. That's what I was told. That guy believes in Obamagate. Okay.
Yeah, apparently a lot of people, for them to pay that type of money, he got a lot of listeners.
I think this is my favorite article of the week. Oh, shit. Oh
shit.
News, bitch. We coming for your face. Right. We about to, oh, all right. Barstool Sports Dave Portnoy speaks out on Call Her Daddy podcast drama. Karen, you ever listen to this podcast?
Never heard of it.
I have never heard of it either.
Call, and you know we listen to everything.
Two Americas. This is a huge podcast, Karen.
What? Never heard of it in my life.
This podcast is fucking huge. Barstool Sports is huge. And you know, I know a lot of people, it's very dude bro white guy stuff, but very big, you know. They have, and they branched out, they have a lot of podcasts over there, they're paying them all kinds of money,
like a network, right?
Yeah,
I'm assuming. Okay.
Yeah, but when in this industry, podcasting, there's very little like money talk. Like, we never know what someone's making. You never know what advertisers are paying them.
Nope.
You don't necessarily even know someone's viewership, because you know that data is normally housed, you know, in proprietary situations, or it's private, or it's behind some paywall or something like that. So you really don't know what the fuck is happening, right? But we get a little peek behind the white page, the white side of things, Karen.
Okay.
This weekend, The Post reported that the battle between Barstool Sports and the co-host of the raunchy Call Her Daddy podcast had become one between the women themselves. On Sunday night, Barstool founder Dave Portnoy took over the Call Her Daddy podcast and dropped a blockbuster episode in which he confirmed The Post reporting, laying bare the guts of the disagreement and revealing how he told co-host Alexandra Cooper via text message, "In my 17 years of doing this, I've never dealt with anyone as unprofessional and disloyal and greedy as the two women." Cooper and co-host Sophia Franklin haven't recorded an episode since April. It's since been revealed that the two were trying to break their Barstool contract to take on television and book deals potentially worth millions of dollars. Millions. The Barstool honcho recapped his entire relationship with the duo, saying he discovered them via Cooper's Instagram and offered the women a 3-year deal. Initially, the two didn't want to give up their brand's intellectual property, including the Call Her Daddy name. When they learned there was no deal without Barstool owning the brand, the women relented and signed a contract, which paid them around $70,000 annually each, plus bonuses.
So they didn't want to sign, then they did.
They didn't want to sign up. It's like someone saying, "Hey, we will like Rod and Karen, we would like you to come work for, I don't know, Sirius Radio," and they go, "But if you work for us, we own your intellectual property, the Blackout Tips. We own the name, the merchandise, all that stuff."
Yeah, and it's up to you to how important that is to you,
right? And so, you know, when you're not making that much money, a lot of times you go, "Yeah, okay, like cool, because we're getting money and healthcare. We got a 3-year contract, blah blah blah." But now if I ever leave you guys, you still own the name of my show.
Yeah, I would have to start afresh.
Yeah, I would have to start, you know, whatever. So the podcast was an instant success, with them making, keep in mind what I said, $70,000 a year for the, this is when they first signed. Okay, the podcast was an instant success and bigger than Portnoy's wildest dreams, and he gave them a raise 6 months into it. After the first year, Cooper, who edits the show, pulled in $506,000, and Franklin received $461,000.
Okay.
Yes, okay.
That's a lot of money.
$500,000, essentially. They was making $500,000 a year.
That told you how big their listener base is.
Right, and how popular it was, and also how much money Barstool must be making off of them.
Right.
They're not giving you money they don't got.
Right.
So you earn that money. Like, that's advertising and all this. Now, they're earning it, too. I'm not saying Barstool did nothing, but.
But they're making more and giving you a fraction.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's how business works, right?
Correct.
They went from unknown talent to each making close to $500,000 in a year, Portnoy said, claiming that the women leaked to the press that they were underpaid. A few months ago, when the duo wanted to renegotiate their contracts, their lawyers sent Barstool Sports a list of demands, including $1 million guaranteed for each of them, according to Portnoy. They no longer wanted to be Barstool employees, and they wanted 50% of all money earned from the brand, including merchandise and ads, and they wanted to own the brand.
Right, because they know it's money out there. Like they're to the point where we didn't know it was going to get this big. Now we do. Y'all are making a killing off of us, and we want some.
What did we get in return? Nothing, said Portnoy, who cut off negotiations. That is when they started shopping, call her daddy around, looking to go somewhere else and break their contract with us. He added, Barstool's stance was, if you guys take call her daddy and go somewhere else, we're gonna sue the fuck out of you like you're under a 3-year contract. Instead, Cooper and Franklin stopped working completely. Portnoy said the company had been losing $100,000 for every missed episode. He offered them a deal that would guarantee them $500,000 each plus bonuses. It would also knock 6 months off the women's contracts and let them walk away at the end with their intellectual property. He estimated that the deal, which paid them both equally, would net millions. It was a no-brainer, said Portnoy. He didn't hear from the co-host or their lawyers for days, and then Cooper reached out and said she wanted to accept the deal, but that Franklin would never agree because she was allegedly being influenced by her boyfriend, HBO sports executive Peter Nelson. Ooh, the white drama thickens.
Right.
I was starting to hear whispers, and Cooper confirmed it, and this is the big part of the story. Franklin's new boyfriend, Peter Nelson, HBO executive, probably greenlit a hit piece on me not too long ago, came into the mix. He was the one who brought in all these lawyers. He was openly shopping, call her daddy, claimed Portnoy, referring to a 2019 episode of HBO's Real Sports. That hit piece included allegations by women who claimed they had been harassed online and that it was encouraged by Barstool after voicing criticisms of the brand. A source close to Franklin previously told the Post that she was willing to agree to Portnoy's deal. Sophia agreed to the financial terms of Barstool's offer, but hasn't heard back from them. She wants to continue the podcast with her friend 50/50. Portnoy also claimed that Nelson was acting almost as a manager for the two women and helped them get an offer from the podcast network Wondery. They were going to call the podcast
over there too.
Right. They were going to call the podcast The Fathers. He added that Cooper wanted to return to the fold and negotiated a deal that would give her 75% of the brand, leaving a quarter for Barstool and cutting out Franklin completely. Damn. Word. Wow. Portnoy claimed he offered Franklin her own show, but she declined. Cooper may yet return to take over the original show, but he said a lot is still up in the air. A part of me is like, you know what? No amount of money is worth this. Let's get rid of them, keep the intellectual property, and start this over again ourselves. So I guess hire two different women to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper and Franklin and Nelson did not respond to the Post request for comment. Portnoy said, there's nothing more to add. My podcast episode spoke for itself. Man, the drama in white podcasting, who knew?
Mm-hmm. Because they looked, because his thing was like, hey, we'll cut it 6 months. Like, he was willing to work with them, and shit, y'all can have it. Let's just do it so we won't lose all our goddamn money.
And that's the side, that's his side of the story, right?
Right. Obviously, but who knows what really happened?
Yeah, because someone was telling me, because I don't know all this stuff, I don't listen to these shows, so someone was telling me, like, they have like a hip hop podcast with I can't remember the rapper's name. I know I saw a video of him beefing with Joe Budden, but there was like, that dude's making $2 or $3 million as a host, and I'm like, so maybe they were underpaid.
Right.
What happened was, a lot of people was, you know how it is on Twitter, they hate white women.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw it was two traditionally attractive white women, and so it was like, oh, well, they look like Barbie dolls, so of course, blah blah blah. And I'm like, okay, but who are the people that make more than them? Because I guarantee you, they don't look like Barbie dolls.
And it wouldn't surprise me if the people that make money than them don't have the same listenership as they do.
Well, whether they do or not.
Right.
My point is, if they feel like they're underpaid, it's not like, you know, like if they're just asking for like compensation at the rate that they believe they should be compensated, and that may even be below some of the other people on the network. The question then becomes to me, it can't just be, well, these white women fuck them, in my opinion. Do they have a case or not?
Right.
Because if they have a case, I'm on the side of whoever has the case. Because, you know, whether you're a white woman or not, if you're not getting paid what you're supposed to get paid, that's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to dismiss it, you know.
Yeah, because everybody feels like that. Because
they're traditionally attractive is ridiculous.
Right. Everybody feels like that to this day, money being fucked up. You know, you the first person in the line smoking, they fuck around and fuck up your overtime, a time and a half, and you don't get paid. But you expect other people to be like, oh, well.
The main thing I realized, though, is that we are never going to have this problem because we'll never see that kind of money. Not doing what we do, talking about the shit we talk about. Ain't nobody ever. Like, I always meet black podcasters who have like this idea of like some white people coming in to almost like to basically save us, mm-hmm. and be like, man, if I can get on with this network, these networks. And I'm like, no network's gonna give me the money they're giving white folks. And especially with what we talk about. And I don't want to lose the ability to talk about this shit.
Correct.
You know, so like, it's a big, like, that was the main, I mean, I can't imagine turning down $500,000 plus they shave 6 months off your contract. And you can shop your shit around and own the intellectual property rights to it at the end of those time. And going, not only no, but fuck you, I'm not working.
Yeah, right.
I can't even imagine
and,
that.
And there must have been some big money. They was like, oh, no. We'll actually wait this contract out and have you lose money.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that. And I don't think podcast is not the kind of thing where, like, there's money to be made, but it takes a big investment. And correct. I just don't see anyone that's a mover and shaker that seems that interested in people that talk like us and monetizing them to this degree. You know, it would take a, you know, some Tyler Perry, Oprah type person, and of course they're gonna pick their, like, everyone, you pick your people and you monetize your folks. And he found these women on one of them on Instagram. I'm sure the way they look had a lot to do with it. I don't know the content of their podcast or what they talk about. Mm-hmm. I do no know idea. They say a lot of college kids listen to it. They say, you know, that demographic is mostly like a bro type demographic for Barstool. So,
right.
You know, that's where the money is. That's why Joe Rogan getting $100 million from Spotify. Like, the money is crazy over there.
Is where the money at?
Yeah. And this is one of the reasons I stopped banging on so hard on, some of these, black radio personalities, because I was like, they kind of almost have to be like this to get to the money.
Yes.
Because they start being a little too woke, a little too fucking well-read, a little too opinionated, you know, they stop asking questions and start providing answers, you know, they're not going to be able to make this money. And mm-hmm. then the thing they do instead is they ask the questions, and then once in a while they stumble onto some, like, woke talking point. They get patted on the back because the bar's so low, and then they leave it at that.
Oh yeah.
You know, but they're not, like, the money is not for people that are gonna be, you know, I'm up here talking about intersectional feminism. Yo, well, you're not gonna get to be Call Her Daddy rich. And that's and Call Her Daddy turned down the money that most, I'm sure, 99.9% of black podcasts would be like, that's the money I want. And they said, nah, fuck that. That's not enough. Like, oh, so great.
It must be a lot of money on tape for them to go, no, our potential is bigger than what you're offering.
The Game of Thrones level white shade and treachery over there mm-hmm. is amazing.
And you know, with it being so big, eventually, if there's more to the story, it will leak out.
Mm-hmm. I just feel like Ariel singing a part of their world, you know? To have those problems, you know what I mean? Karen, that's it. We ain't doing no more episodes until we get $1 million each and get to shop our intellectual property around. I'm sick of it. It's like, y'all, and they probably record like once a week, you know what I mean?
Right, once a goddamn week.
They record once a week.
Don't do no bonus shows, no nothing, just one time.
Oh my god. And the money they must be making off of them. Oh my god.
Yeah, the money they're making off of them is ridiculous.
They must, because if they were,
and that's why they fought it. They was like, no, we're not getting our money's worth because we're getting a fraction of what you're making.
If they was willing to pay $1 million for them not to leave and give them their IP back,
they're making more than that.
They must be caking off these women. Oh my god, who knows what they got to say for that shit to blow up. Mm-mm-mm. Anyway, let's get to the final thing, sword ratchetness.
And on the low, like I said, with me not knowing anything about them, if mm-hmm. they were being underpaid, I hope they make their money.
Oh yeah, I don't have no hate in my blood. That's mm-mm. the thing. I saw people kind of being jealous of them, and I was just more talking about the industry as a whole, like whiteness separate, like blackness versus whiteness in that industry is so different.
Yeah, that's why,
like, white people function on a whole nother level. There's like, you know, I doubt anyone at loudspeakers is making even like enough money to live. You know, we talk to Tatiana and Ben all the time, and it's like, yo, we have to work in addition to the work we do on this podcast. Mm-hmm. With that kind of money, you literally could solely focus on doing a podcast.
Correct.
And obviously the other things, touring, all the stuff that comes around with it, but mm-hmm. like that's your living if you want it to be. And then not just that, because they have white ears, people are like, we want to give you a book deal, we want to give you another job in another role, like mm-hmm. like the just when you're white, the limit is the fucking sky. When you're black, it's a tough road out there, you know what I mean? Not that there's no black people doing well, blah blah blah, any of that stuff. I like Jemele Hill's over at Spotify now. Mm-hmm. Hopefully she's doing well, you know, but it just makes you think, like, man, there's like a big divide in this game.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily independent, like part of it's independent and corporate, mm-hmm. but a bigger part of that is actually race.
Correct.
You know, this is when people say stuff like podcasting is so white, this is what they're really saying. It's like,
right,
white people want to listen to white people.
Right. They don't want to listen to nobody else.
I don't blame iTunes. I don't blame the big corporate entities or whatever. White people who get to select what they want to listen to, they scrolling past all this black shit, man.
Yes, unless, they are.
Unless you a certain type of black, you know, unless you're willing to be like, maybe all lives do matter or whatever, you know, tap dancing it up, you're gonna be in a tough situation. And I bet money, even the ones who be tap dancing probably have less listeners than the white folks in those, like, so like a Candace Owens probably has less listeners than like a Richard Spencer or whatever.
Of course.
That would be my guess. Anyway. A Saginaw Township man was arrested after threatening his neighbors with a miniature samurai sword, police say. About 1:30 p.m. on Monday, May 4th, police were dispatched to a residence in the 2300 block of Greenbush Place for a neighbor dispute stemming from a hit and run, said Saginaw Township Police Lieutenant Rick Herron. Officers said a guest of the house in question was leaving and crashed his vehicle into a neighbor's parked car and then continued on his way without stopping. As officers are en route to the scene, a 20-year-old resident of the house became involved in a dispute with his neighbors. An off-duty officer who happened to be nearby and knew the man attempted to calm the situation, Herron said. The 20-year-old turned his focus on the off-duty officer and began making threats to him, police allege. At some point, the resident went into his house and then came back outside, brandishing approximately a 2-foot-long sword and made threats to kill those he'd been in dispute with, Herron said. Uniform officers arrived and tried to arrest the subject. A scuffle ensued, which ended with the subject being taken into officer's custody. Police took the man to Covenant Healthcare for an evaluation to verify he was not injured and to see if there was a medical reason for his erratic behavior. Herron said staff at the hospital cleared the man and police took him to Saginaw County Jail, where he was lodged in a 4-year felony charge of an assault with a dangerous weapon. The case is being forwarded to the Saginaw County Prosecutor's Office for review. The arrested man's name has been withheld pending arraignment. All right, y'all, that's it for this episode mm-hmm. of the show. We'll be back tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yes, sir.
With our girls, Q and J, Queen and J from mm-hmm. Tea with Queen and J.
That should be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, sir. We've had a lot of great guests in the last couple of weeks, and
yes, we have.
I feel like it continues tomorrow. So, looking forward to that. If you guys like this too much, we put an episode out this morning, me and Bossy. So, hopefully, guys, you enjoyed that. There wasn't a lot of Molly in this episode, so you guys didn't get to do a lot of projecting, but you know, I believe in you. I think you guys can still find a way to project all over her. Okay. All right. Until tomorrow. I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.